Hello and welcome to episode 57 of Views on Minis, or 56.
Who cares? 56.
No one knows.
5-6.
Is it 5-6?
It's 5-6.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of Views on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
Ba-doom.
All right.
My name is Fat Asian.
I suppose.
And I play Conversions of Cirrus.
I need to know who we are.
And I also play Protector to Menoth
and
Minions.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's happening at Lockheed.
Spoiler.
I don't believe it. Legion got the boot, I guess.
I thought you weren't going to tell anybody.
I can't keep a secret.
Yeah, no.
I also cannot tell a lie.
Okay. This is Chad, and I play Trollbloods.
This is Josh. I play Mercs.
This is Keith, and I play Krix, Circle of Ouroboros, and Zignar.
This is Kromp, and I currently play Mercs.
And Kador.
And I might play Kador.
And Star Fox 64.
And that.
It's coming.
And Dota.
All right. Pretty good show tonight, I would say. We're going to start with some... What?
Are you speaking from the future instead of into the future?
Wait, what?
Either?
He's saying it's a pretty good
Marty.
Show tonight.
Great Scott.
So we're going to start with some news and announcements. On June the 8th, there is a 50-point steamroller at the Gamer's Gauntlet in the Clinton Township of Michigan.
That is Paint Vagrant and the Boys throwing down.
Awesome.
Also, just a quick mention that the American Team Championship is taking place somewhere in Tennessee.
Murfreesboro,
Tennessee, sometime
What's
in the summer?
Actual place?
It's Murfreesboro.
Yeah, that's the actual name.
Murfreesboro.
Look it up.
Yep. Murfreesboro.
Burrow.
Honestly, we're trying to do you guys a favor. The reason why we screw up these names so bad is to make it memorable.
Right. Borog is the correct.
We're all going to see Atoll in a week for. No, it's not Murfreesboro. There's no way.
Yeah, it's Murfreesboro.
Really is. It is.
Yeah, it really is. That's a real place.
Look it up.
A real place in the U.S. of A.
I like how I got an iPad so Crump can have it permanently at his disposal.
Anyway. Yeah, how did you not predict that?
You put it right in front of me.
No, I actually did not.
He actually hid it.
It
was like under the stairs.
Dragged it in front of yourself. That's basically the same thing as
anything,
right?
Yes, it is, Chad.
So we have lots of goodies as far as spoilers go this week. The No Quarter came out officially, so we knew a lot of that information, but it's nice to see it in front of you so you can double check some things. I, for instance, did not realize that the whatchamacallit with the AOE-4.
The monitor? Is that it?
Yeah, the monitor.
Or is it the cipher?
Might be the Merrimack.
The guy with the 2POW-18...
Civil War jokes. Nice.
I go deep.
Really? Because that thing only went like 15 feet. See, look. Google says there is no Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
You didn't spell it right.
Yeah. What is Google?
You
know?
Spelled it
Murfreesboro. Literally Murfreesboro. Burrow.
Well, there's no
Tennessee.
Z in it.
What?
No, it's an S.
The South doesn't use Google anyway, so that's why it's not going to show up.
How do you spell Des Moines? D-U-H-M-O-Y-N-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The way it's really spelled.
But yeah, the guy with the AOE-4 gun is ROF-2, so he can drop two rifts, two rough terrain templates. Two flares is the really cool part. It's a lot of defense reduction.
I think the two rough terrain templates is also situationally really good.
Yeah, just range.
Against what absolutely. Factions, John?
Range. Just give me that.
It's range 11.
What you're looking for.
It's the cipher is what you're talking about, and it's range 11.
Yeah.
What? Why that's
very decent.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Especially since you can just give it the one focus and then cascade it over.
Yep.
With the...
It's like, buy another shot. And whoop.
Wow, that's really good.
And more impressively today, DC laid out roughly what we can expect from the Prime Axiom, which, just thinking about the fact that it is a colossal, is kind of interesting within the faction because we know that it's going to be extremely easy to get that guy three focus without trying very hard.
Always an induction range.
Yeah, it's just 6-inch because its 6-inch footprint is so huge on that.
Can something induction more than once?
Like, you can. You can't send more than one focus out from one target, but you can get more than one.
So you can have three. You can have like Jack A spend one, give it to Jack B. Jack B spend one, give it to Jack C, and then Jack C give it to the Colossal, and then just do that three times.
No.
You can have Jacks A, B, and C all give one to Jack D.
Oh, I gotcha.
And power it up to three.
But because the footprint's so big, it's easy to make sure that your Jacks are all within range.
Very good.
So your Cypher launches two minus defense templates and gives one focus to the
Colossal.
The Prime Axiom.
I was actually also really happy when I saw just from his base stats, he's base armor 20.
Base armor 20 is very good.
That's a big deal.
Base armor 20. And based on the grids on the... there are other heavies. I wouldn't be surprised to see it as one of the higher health total Colossals. Although it is, it does have characteristics of the other heavy kit, namely the hovering kit. So it might be a little lighter on the boxes, but we don't know. We don't know what their grid looks like. So, but the their heavy jacks do have the 32.
Yep.
32 boxes. Same as generally the Kador warjacks do.
Kador Warjacks have 34.
Yeah.
Protectorate ones have 32.
Okay. Aren't Kador only missing the top two?
I think so.
They're not one in each corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of theirs.
Also, we know that the Prime Axiom has two tow cables with drag. So two instances of drag seems pretty good.
Double Dragon. That's its name.
Oh, my God.
It is a way better name than Prime Axiom.
Can it jump kick?
Probably.
Obviously.
It's hovering.
Yeah, it is hovering. It's always jump kicking.
So I'm guessing
perma jump kick.
Death from above.
Sweet. So Cyrus can or Convergence can team up with minions, and then you can have Battletoads and Double Dragon. Boom.
I like it.
That's happening.
Three people got that joke. Go on.
I'm anticipating a short range on those tow cables.
8-inch.
I'm thinking 7.
Teen.
Or 9.
Well, because it's got to be prime.
Right? Yeah, they
nine,
can't be 8.
9
right.
is not prime.
Yeah, so it's yeah. probably 7.
Could be 11.
Could
be 11.
Could be 17.
I don't think
23?
So.
23?
Yeah, no.
47.
No. No, it's going to be speed 5 or 3, right?
It's going to be speed 4.
No, that's not prime.
The speeds are not prime numbers.
But this is the prime axiom. Everything is prime.
Should be.
Or axiom. Either way.
Anywho.
But then it's other gun.
Speed 4 is truth!
I love it.
What we know of its other gun is interesting. In the Insider, DC said between 3 and 6 shots, which the only thing I can think of under the current rules without inventing something new that's going to generate between 3 and 6 shots would be 3 weapon systems with ROF2.
Or 3 linked weapon systems.
Or yeah, or possibly, yes, linked weapon systems.
Like are on the Conquest? The secondary batteries?
Or special dice for this specific jack.
That's not happening. You know better than that. Nice try, though.
They might have prime number dice.
Yeah, what if it's D6 plus 2?
How would we get 6?
I don't know.
That would be between 3 and 8 shots.
What if it's D6 plus 2 unless you roll 6 and then it's minus 2?
Yeah, what if it's just an algebra equation?
3 and 7 shots?
What if it is 3 gun systems that just fired D2 shots?
That's possible.
What if it's D4 plus 2? Boom.
Shoot it.
Snap.
Everyone has to buy their triangle dice.
Nailed it.
Nailed
to play
it.
That is the most likely explanation.
Shut up, Josh. Trolling me.
I think this thing looks really good. I was thinking about it today with Father Lucant, and a turn of that thing with +4 armor and then all the repair that you're going to be able to do.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God, it's going to be so awesome.
+4 armor and deceleration.
Yeah.
How about Syntharion?
And when he on his feet turn, all the repair checks just succeed.
Yep.
Yeah, and you've got a ton of repair stuff.
Dude, it's like a mountain king that actually could survive.
Syntharion, +4 inches of charge, and then the drag after the charge because of the feat for battle engine.
Well, if you charge, ooh, you can.
Yeah, Syntharion gives it battle weapons platform, so you can charge and then fire the drag shot.
Oh, God.
So that's like the downtown. It's like, how far is your caster away? 20-ish inches. All right, we got this.
And behind a jack. That's fine. Tow the jack. Now tow your caster.
Centurion also has Hotshot.
True.
That seems fair and balanced on something that can generate 8 shots.
Double dragon.
Right? 8 shots plus Hotshot and then buy attacks?
Yeah.
I'd probably make that work.
Seems okay. Seems okay.
I'm gonna figure out a way to make that work. Holy crap.
I really like
pig.
Having 2 chances at drag.
I wonder, you know what's the most important stat on that is going to be?
The pow.
The pow of the drag weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, the pow of the drag weapon will be important.
It's probably 11.
It's pow 11. You're going to be like, no!
The pow of the little guns is also very important. What are they called? Acellus Bikers. I don't love that name.
I love it.
I bet you they have puncture.
What's the pow on the so giant, safe. Like, Rambot spear?
Pow 18. 18. Piston spikes.
The pow. Just the pow.
Six. No, like six, the, you Earthborn.
What's the pow on the...
The super, like, shot. Yeah. The one shot, like... It's got to be 8.
The knockdown guy.
It's got to be 8.
The macro pummeler. Indeed, pow 8.
Fantastic.
Good for Earthborns.
Love it.
Their warjacks are strength 12. So, obviously, with the Prime Axiom, it's... Function will largely be determined by the caster stats that it's running with.
Mm-hmm.
Forge Master as a 6/5 is one of the prime candidates for being just all around effective with it.
I'm super excited for the
also
Forge
with
Master.
The number of, with the number of, I mean, just with the flare, I guess, that makes the Mother Directrix decent too.
Yes. Yeah. It also makes, I think Lucant was spoiled at Rat 4, which is on the.
What's his hat?
6. I think he's 6/4.
Yeah.
I'm not positive. Mm. He might also be 6/5. If he's 6/5, he's amazing with the Prime Axiom. If he's 6/4, it's very workable. I don't know that it's going to be definitive.
Do we know Aurora's Matten Rat yet?
6/6, wasn't it? Or 7/6?
Very good.
It was good.
Okay.
7/6?
I don't think she's
7/6. That would actually be bonkers.
I think
Axis is 7/4.
Yeah. Character warjacks all around.
I don't think we know what Aurora's are.
I don't think we are. We do.
I believe we're completely in the dark on that one.
It's probably 6/5.
No, I bet she's Mat 7, but she might be 5 rat.
Well, she has flank.
Even 7/5 would be amazing.
It would be really good.
Yep.
That's also character warjack stats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man, Prime Axiom.
But not quite Signar stats.
Well.
We,
they pay for it in other ways.
Yeah, they do.
We also,
in the ways that involve never taking jacks.
No, Signar actually is one of the heavier jack factions, I feel like. Like, sort of right behind Menoth. I mean, they're not Menoth, but they're more likely to play jacks than any of the other
Warmachine
factions.
Screw that faction.
Cator, Crix, and Mercs.
Yeah.
And even Red.
I still remember the first time I made a melee attack with a defender. I was like, oh, God, this is going to be awful. Like, let's look down at this guy. 7. Like, this is amazing.
Pow 17? All right. What's going on?
No, it's not pow 17.
It's 16.
Pow 16,
yeah.
Oh, but it does auto-hit cortexes, right?
It's Mat 7. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Cortex damage, which does not affect Convergence Warjacks.
Convergence OP.
They don't have cortexes at all?
Nope. Just induction nodes.
Can't be disrupted?
Induction nodes function exactly the same as cortexes with some exceptions.
So if you lose an induction node, you may not assign focus?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Or spend it.
But
matters.
Word.
Yeah. And they can't be, you can't use the, without functional induction nodes, obviously they can't gain focus
via
induction.
I assumed that was the case.
It's a really, really, really interesting side mechanic that makes the faction.
Yeah, it's going to make the faction tick.
It changes their playstyle so drastically from other War Machine factions. None of the other War Machine factions really have drastically different playstyles.
True.
It's just more or less jacks, essentially. Whereas this makes their playstyles, like, totally different.
Yeah,
like,
Convergence almost, throws 3 or 4 focus out there and puts it to work doing 6 to 8 focus.
Yeah, it almost makes Hordes look...
I was going to say this
like,
makes...
Hordes almost looks jealous, or is jealous about that.
Yeah, I think it's still less powerful than the Fury mechanic, but more powerful than the focus mechanic.
I think I'm rating it in between focus and Fury.
It's less powerful than the Fury mechanic, yes. But then their casters, so far, have amazing spell lists.
That's true.
They're looking okay so far.
So...
Somebody asked, and I forgot to take down a name, in our quickfire or I was just looking through the Facebook thread, what they thought Convergence's good and bad matchups would be based on what we know thus far. I'm still looking at Convergence as a faction that suffers on the defensive front. They put together a really interesting combination of effects that make them powerful on the offensive, mostly the melee offensive from what I've seen so far. Their guns are unimpressive.
They're pretty low pow.
But they're...
One of those guns in there is pretty good.
They've got one that's pretty good. Range 13, pow 13, true sight with crit brutal.
Yeah, I mean, fine.
That's okay.
But that's on a heavy. I mean, it's still not a defender cannon.
There's no pow 15, pow 16 guns that we've seen.
Exactly.
Maybe on the floaters.
To put that in perspective, that's basically the pow of an impaler.
I guess. I don't know.
Pow 13.
If you're boosting the hit, I feel like you could get quite a lot of crits if you're shooting against
enemies. Roughly a third of the time. Or 42% or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little over 40%.
Depends on your hit numbers.
Right.
Assuming any given crits, it's in the 30s.
Most of the things you care about, crit brutal on a POW 13.
Probably going to hit
on
three dice.
Yeah,
averaging it out, it's POW 14 then. Still not a defender. They've got some okay guns, but we're not looking at this as a ranged-centric faction at this point, unless the Prime Axiom's powers are very high.
Or, again, that the Hoverjacks, if they have...
That's true.
Like, just one of the... If just one of them has a good gun, then that changes it.
Based on the descriptions, I think the one Hoverjack that was described as having a gun was infantry sweeping.
That's what it sounded like, anyway.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, some of the casters can make a play at it, like Directrix with the harm effect, with the imperil effect. Then you're looking at POW 15 shots with crit brutal, and some things can happen there. But it still seems dicey. It doesn't seem like a game plan to me.
I concur.
So I'm looking at... We're looking at a melee-oriented with ranged support Jack faction that creates combos. And from what I've seen of their war casters, only Lucant is anything that I would call defensive. So I think they're still going to have problems with high damage output that they can't slow down.
I think lots of weapon masters are going to be hard on this faction.
Yep.
Seems like Lucant's going to be a popular choice then, just for that. They'll probably have one offensive, you know, pick it from all of the other casters, and then their second one will be Lucant, just on the off chance they go up against.
Yeah, we don't know a great deal about the faction. I mean, we're still missing half the spell lists from three of the casters, four of the casters.
We forgot the most one of the most important abilities that the Prime Axiom had.
Free solos.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think Father Lucant is shaping up to be what looks to me like the strongest caster at this point.
I think so, based on what I've seen.
Talk about the Prime Axiom more.
Yes, so the Prime Axiom, the one ability, DC's favorite ability, is called Launch Servitor, and it does exactly what it sounds like. At any point during its activation, you can just place one of the servitors
within two
inches. So that's the Attunement Servitor that does bodges and strips. The
Money Servitor. I forget what it's called.
The countercharge explosion servitor?
No. The one that has... There's one that has flare, right?
Yeah, one has flare.
Oh, one of the servitors has flare?
Yeah. One of the servitors has flare.
As well as the monitor?
Yes. One of the servitors has flare. There's the countercharge explosion one. There's the bodge strip one. And then there's the...
The gun one.
The gun one. The spikes.
The spike. The puncture gun.
See all these terrible names and how I can't remember any of them?
We got it. Yeah. Gun one.
Yeah, there's the strip bodge one.
The Attunement Servitor. Yep.
Boom.
Boom.
Headshot.
Hey, what are the three songs that the choir sings, Crump?
Dance all day. Dance all day. I got this.
Passage, shielding, and...
Battle.
It used to be called Infuse. Now it's just called Song of Battle, isn't it?
Boom.
I know them all.
I didn't.
What are the Covenant of Menoth's three magic abilities?
I have no earthly idea what they're called.
No knockdown.
No spells and fire. That's the Prime Axiom. I'm excited. It looks... And it's got... Oh, it's melee weapons. It has two. They look like open fist. I mean, they're going to be high power. Minimum 19.
I'm just thinking about popping out an Attunement Servitor every round, no matter what. And it's basically just DR for that thing in terms of damage reduction.
Oh, yeah.
Just every turn, like, it gets plus one increasing damage reduction. oh, you only did 6 damage to me this turn, but I've got 3 guys back here. Whoop.
Bodge, bodge, bodge.
Put another guy out.
Bodge,
next
bodge,
turn.
Bodge, bodge.
Did 6 damage to me again, but now I get rid of 4 of it.
I'm thinking like late game. It creates, especially with Lucant, late game with Lucant dropping out the countercharge guys. He's like, what are you going to do about it? And they're like, well, I have this one gun left. Ah, but deceleration is a problem. Maybe I'll hit it. Boop. Ah, spike thrill. Yes, I hit it. Prime Axiom shield guards. Ooh.
It's got shield guard?
Yeah, and well, Lucan's battle group. Yeah.
Oh, shield my guard. God. Yeah. Why?
So it's just all these countercharge bots are just sitting out in front of it as it's been just sitting back and like shooting the whole game, and now there's just this minefield sitting there. It's like, you want to come kill him? Try.
And then your Satixus Raiders are like, yes.
All
yes,
day,
I,
buddy.
I do want to come kill
him.
Oh, buddy.
Sad times.
I've never seen a late game that involves Satixus Raiders.
There's no such thing.
Exactly.
You're true. You're right. They'll just kill it on turn 2.
Right. Exactly.
I do
good
going
point,
back.
Josh.
Thank you.
Going back to that user's question, I do think that Krix is going to be a difficult matchup. A lot of people, I've been reading, and people are like, oh, man, Krix is in trouble. They're not going to be able to get, you know, corpses or souls or what? Whatever. And like, Krix doesn't care.
Terminus, no!
Yeah.
Asphyxius is still like, I think we're fine here.
Yeah. He's like, sweet, I get to eat new flavors of Jax on my feet.
So is Peace Car.
Yeah, Peace Car's like,
just so you
back
guys know.
Flash? And they're like, oh, God.
I don't
defense 10, armor 19, 34 32 boxes is not what you want to be when Backlash is on the enemy caster's spell card.
Yeah.
When you have Satixus Raiders, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out Krix doesn't really care that much about getting souls. As fluffy as that ability is.
No, their casters that do care about it are not the ones that are played for a reason.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Venithrax definitely cares about it. Terminus definitely cares about it, but yep.
And a lot of them still generate souls. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's actually corpses that are hard to come by mm-hmm. from that faction.
The trick with corpse gathering is you bring your own.
Yep, for the most part.
Finally, another faction that screws Alexia.
No,
Fog Truck Shamblers.
Oh
suck.
No,
you just bring your own. Shamblers. Epic Alexia is still fine though; they have souls.
That's true.
Boosh, and they don't like our weapon masters.
Yeah, they yep. can actually,
defense
yeah.
Defense 10, armor 19 is not what you want to be against power 11, power 10 weapon masters either.
Nope. Bad.
But, yeah, I mean, there's just, like, I think Pagani has already said, like, oh, Lucant, I'm just going to take the Prime Axiom and put 5 galvanizers out in front of it. I'm only at 35 points. It's like, oh, what is, well, let me think about that. Oh, God, all those shield guards, like, the damage is spread out. There's 5 repair bots out there, like,
yeah. Yeah,
and then on one turn it's just like, oh, they're getting a little. I lost a galvanizer, and the others are a little bit beat up from shield guarding around. I guess I'll just feet, and my choir boys will head out there and auto repair. And all right, I'll repair for 14d6. Oh, all right, God. Good to go, and we're armored. Good deal this turn.
20,000.
Your go.
Seems fair.
Elitch feet. It's dead.
PTR yeah. pops your feet. Casts. Backlash.
Good game.
I feel like there's going to be a mini game in Father Lucan games of
let's see how beat up I can get before I have to pop my feet.
Yeah, and it's going to be also let's see if I can sneak in some extra damage and spike and just get rid of this thing when he's not paying when the serious player is not paying attention. Just like sneak it
so
in.
It's
there.
Very similar to Epsilonia and Darius.
Yeah,
currently.
How greedy do you want to be? Well, I think he'll live another turn.
I think probably the correct way to play it is just going to be to considering the armor aspect of the feat and when it's most likely to just jam him in.
Concur.
And be difficult to destroy. So that's the new convergence spoilers that we've got. There is one other model that we've had spoiled, and that's the Stormblade solo.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear the spoilers for him.
Oh, he's pretty good.
Mm. I don't think he doesn't change up the faction a great deal. He's not going to be the cause of a mass resurgence of storm nouns everywhere.
I actually think he can fang Govnik solo.
He compares very favorably to the Kithkar.
Yeah. Not terrible.
Decent combat solo.
Yep.
What
yep.
does he do?
He is a 12-16 with 5 boxes, so probably
plus one armor on
what we've
the other
what we've come to expect from the great tradition of storm nouns and defensive stats and death by hand cannon.
Oh my God. He got one more armor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Death by hand cannon.
5 HP is so sad.
Yep. He is mat 8, rat, I believe, 6. Mat 8, rat 6. Power 13, reach weapon master with quick work.
And he's got a longer range on his it's like power 14 and 8 inches on his zap like gun. Yeah.
Speed Wait. 5, presumably, being a storm down.
Is that it?
He doesn't do anything yep. for
his Oh, no. He's got tactician for storm knights, so all the storm downs. And relentless charge for them as well.
So they're Pathfinder charges?
Storm knights?
Yep, storm knights. So that's storm blades, storm guard, storm lances.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I think it's really good for the lances.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, storm lances had tactician in Mark 1 with
Lattermore.
Lattermore.
Yeah, I think if he improved any of them significantly, it's the lances. For the rest of them, it's just like...
Wait, is it like Elite Cadre? Or is it...
No, it's in his command.
I do like Tactician. It's one of my favorite abilities.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I think he's a fine combat solo. He'll do work.
Is he 2 points?
Yeah, he's 2 points.
2 points, FA2.
He's fine.
He might do work. He suffers the same problem of if you can deliver him, he will do work.
Trenchers, dude.
Dude, you can hide him behind some Tactical Arcanist Core.
Uh-huh.
They are pretty fast.
This is we haven't had this disclaimer for a while. Occasionally, we give advice is really not advice.
Tactical Arcanist Core are legit.
More like bad advice.
Hey-o.
Have we not come up with this before?
Isn't bad advice just vice?
Shut up, Jack.
Shut up, you.
So yeah, those are the. I guess that's all the new spoilers. Any thoughts?
Oh,
how are we feeling?
Convergence continues to look ever more impressive and not really manage to make me want to play them. That's good. It's weird.
Like that looks really good.
I'm like that looks really good. I have no desire to play it at all. Okay.
Cool.
Other people will, though.
I look forward to seeing this across the table.
Yeah,
it'll be intriguing.
That'll be very interesting to fight against. That's basically what I'm... Yeah.
So at Lock and Load, if you guys see me and my pants are on fire, it's because my wallet is... My credit card's going to melt.
Or because someone tried to set them on fire.
Well, yeah, that could happen, too.
It would be a joke. It would be a certain amount of irony there. John himself being on fire.
It's just because you... You shunned Ephiora once. You shun her again. She's going to go for your goods.
John, where are your pants? My pants burned down.
Drink.
It's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
Oh, man. Hopefully, yeah, anyway.
Hopefully your pants burn down?
No.
No.
What did
somebody get pictures if they do.
What?
All right, anyway.
So, something we haven't done for a while. We're going to do a new player section. New player section.
We need a good name for this section.
I got nothing at present.
I thought it was Katie's Corner.
Well, it can't be KB. Baby steps.
I don't think you want to be too condescending. Helping hand.
War machine for dummies.
Okay, maybe we wanted to go the other way.
I feel like it should involve the word fresh.
PH?
Yes.
I hate you.
Fresh recruits?
No. I got nothing. Like, my brain is just drawing a complete blank.
Normally today on the new players section, we're going to talk about perseverance. This came up a couple times, actually, in the Facebook thread as well. About... how to continue playing the game when you get your nuts stomped on all the time. I guess that's a sort of different than what we're talking about today. Specifically, what we're talking about today is not giving up at any point during the game.
Yep.
I think it ties in with continuing to play when you get your nuts stomped on, too, though.
Sure, sure.
It's the same sort of.
I mean, what a lot of any experienced player will tell you when you pick up the game, expect to lose a lot and expect to lose badly during the learning process. But
this isn't just for new players either. This is also for experienced players. I definitely, from time to time, have been known to go, I scoop out of this game. Someone's like, you've only lost 5 guys. I'm like, yeah, but I know how the rest of the game is going to go. It's stupid. I quit already.
I have the opposite problem. I never give up.
That's not true.
No, I don't give up.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Chad, why did you give up that argument so quickly?
He had already lost, like, 5 guys.
Because, like, I knew how the rest of that argument was going to go.
All right.
Don't give up. Trust your instincts.
If ever was this one time that I lost a game, I was losing a game against Keith so badly. And John goes, I don't think you've lost this game at all. And I was like, you want to play it? And he was like, sure, scoot over. And I was like, have at it. And he took my army and he looked at the table for like 15 minutes and he was like, oh, God, this is really bad.
But I played it.
It was during the galleon testing phase, as I recall.
Yes, it was.
Well, Keith, I forgot about the patented, I don't know why I forgot about this maneuver, but my game plan revolved around Keith not backing up. This was a bad plan.
Galleon was like 3 steps back, kill another heavy.
I was like, champions, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, he dealt with the champion.
Particularly with Keith, that's a terrible play, because with the exception of Satixus Raiders, everything in Keith's army goes backwards.
Banes go forwards.
To tie it back around, though, yeah, sometimes while you're playing the game, you encounter a point where it feels... I've seen this people do this a lot, where they feel like they have nothing left, or they need... You know, there's no reason for them to continue going on, but even games that you will lose... Still, you can get a lot of value out of playing them out. Like, and then sometimes, and not even rarely, it's pretty frequently, actually, people will make mistakes and allow you to come back from a losing position.
Here's something.
Oh, I was going to say, and it's a dice game, and oftentimes the best stories in this game are where something ridiculously weak, like a choir, kills a heavy, or a Gorax kills an avatar, Minoth.
Why are they all my stories?
What? I don't know.
Anyway, one thing I wanted to say was, this was such a good point, too, just a second ago in my mind. God dang it. I hate it when this
Crump, you ruin everything.
Good.
We were talking about...
Good.
He's...
So close.
But yeah, it's also, I would say...
This is my point. I'm sorry. Before I apologize. What you have to understand as a new player is one of the values that you have, the cards you can play, particularly if you're playing War Machine, not so much in Hordes, is one of the hardest models to kill that you have is your Warcaster or Warlock. So if you commit them and you get your opponent to try and kill you but fail, they've wasted a lot of high-value attacks, and it can often allow you to climb back into the game. Because they're taking high value attacks at your caster, which really have no value until you die. So it is something that can help reverse the attrition if you're on the wrong end of the attrition slide.
Yep, there are a lot of ways to turn the game around, and there are a lot of different ways that with all those different ways, the only way to learn them is to try.
Yep.
The only way to familiarize yourselves with ways to fight back from behind is from being behind and fighting back, and. Anytime the game starts to go poorly for you, you give up on the whole situation. You're not going to learn. And also, it takes a certain level of trying to phrase this kindly. There's a certain point at which you can say definitively, like, "Yes, I can no longer win this game. Like, I'm definitely out of it." But you have to really know everything that's going on. You have to be pretty far along to know when that point is, I would say. It's not easy as a newer player to look at a game and be like, it's unwinnable at this point.
It's not easy as an advanced player to look at that sometimes.
Even for advanced players, I mean, this game isn't chess. You know, you can't look at the table. Like, I can look at a table a lot of the times and be like, I think I know how this game is going to look in 3 turns. But it's basically a crapshoot about whether I'm right or not.
Yeah. Dice can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Someone makes a decision, like one decision that you... wouldn't have made, or that you didn't think that they were going to make, but you know, all the rest of their decisions were spot on. They make one differently, and then suddenly the entire table looks different. Yep. You know, something like that.
Another thing I want to bring up too, and this is advice for new players, and something that that we like to foster in our local meta is when you sit down to play a game and you're a new player, you need to identify yourself as such to the person you're playing against and say, hey, I'm a new player, and you're probably going to kill my caster. So if you could do me a favor, if you see an assassination, tell me about it, how you were going to kill me, and then we'll play the game. We'll continue to play the game, and you win that one. We'll count it as a win for you, but we'll continue to play the game. and what that does is it teaches you to look for assassinations and also play the game, because you don't learn a lot. It's kind of like playing poker shorthanded. The game is different at the end game than it is in the early game,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very different skill set. And a lot of times you get cheated out of that experience because you get assassinated a lot when you're new. Mm-hmm. So I think new players should try and you know, not every advanced player is going to do this. They're going to take their wins and go do something else or whatever. But you should just say, okay, yeah, you win, but let me just move my caster back 3 inches. You didn't take any of those attacks. I see what you're doing. Now play as if you couldn't assassinate my caster so I can see how to play deeper into the game. And I think that's – you're losing, but it gives you more satisfaction, more learning.
I hadn't really thought about that. But if you are getting your caster killed in a majority of your games, in addition to just playing more conservative so that doesn't happen, especially in the early game, playing beyond that point is important for improving your overall gameplay. I definitely agree with that, the later game – because when it's down to rephrasing, your caster gains in importance as the game goes on. Like the caster's contribution increases for most casters as the game progresses. There are some few who become less valuable as the game size decreases.
More as most of the men off casters.
Well, and casters that have bonkers feats and not like good spell lists.
Yeah, but. And then there's other casters that are sort of on a curve where they're the same value all through the game, like Ekane.
I would say as the game gets smaller, he becomes more and more.
I agree.
More valuable because he removes a greater percentage of what's left every turn.
Epic Haley somehow gets worse.
Epic Haley is the greater point value, the more valuable she is as a piece. It's bizarre.
The more points that are on the table, the more, because she's leverage. She's like a lever. You have to have something to pull with.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't do the work by herself. So, I mean, if you're charging with Haley, something's gone wrong.
Yep, this is true. She is not a melee beat stick, as it were. But anyway, so yeah, it's very important to stay in the game all the way up until the end. Sometimes it's important to see if you can stay in the game past the end, just to see how it might have gone. But until you've played a lot of games, scooping before the end, you have to have a very good reason to do so, I would say.
I actually frequently like, as you said, you know, it's kind of like poker or chess or whatever. Like, there are definitely different stages of the game, and it's important to get the experience in those stages of the game, the beginning stage, middle stages, the end stages. They all play differently. a lot of times I'll take a game that I know I'm going to lose, or I guess am fairly certain that I will lose at the end if everything goes, you know, statistically likely. And, I'll look for, you know, like maybe it's if I'd gotten another scenario point here on this turn, maybe the game would be different. So what pieces would I have had to move? You can think about the game like when you're done, but I also find that like in that late game scenario when I'm able to like look at the board and I'm like, okay, here's like my last turn or two where I still have like enough forces to kind of make some kind of push. What sort of pieces would I need to have make this a really credible threat? And you learn things about both your army and also like how you played the previous turns. So you're like, well, maybe I didn't need to move, you know, for example, my nomad quite so far forward this, like on the last turn and trade it here. Maybe I could have held it back. Cause if I had one more heavy this turn, then I could take out this objective and score this zone or whatever the case may be. So I like to use those later turns to kind of figure out, to identify play mistakes that I've made earlier on and figure out ways that when I'm playing this list, what like it teaches me what pieces are really important to that list and what sort of strategies to play with it.
Yeah, you were working towards that point, and I was going to then make it, was that the late game pieces' values change throughout the game. But there are pieces that are amazing in the early game because they take out opponents' key pieces, and there are pieces that are pretty good all game long, but then if you can keep them to the late game, they just become like completely game-changing.
I think Colossals are that way.
Colossals are that way. A lot of heavies are that way. I used to play a game where Deathjack would just sort of chill in the back and not do much of anything until there was only like 15, 20 points left on the table, and he's just like, hey, I'm a Deathjack. What do you plan to do about me being a Deathjack? And the usual response was not much.
Charge it with your caster, and then you get killed. I mean, that's how
charge it with the caster while Asphyxius watches and is like, cute. Bleh. Yeah.
I do very similar things with the Avatar. Try to keep it for late game.
So you can, as the game winds down and you continue to play, you can see like, all I've got left is a few support pieces. These are not valuable in the end game. All I have left is my Creel Stone. Huh. They're still doing a lot of work. Interesting. Like, you can just sort of see, as the games wind down, where you want to be, or where you don't want to be. Pieces that you want to keep around, pieces that you want to try to trade earlier in the game.
There's a very important skill cap that you're going to have to cross at some point, where you figure out when it's time to commit your caster and start doing stuff. For those casters that can be a little bit more active in the game in the end game, because sometimes they will need to charge something or kill some guys or just help give you that edge where they're pretty safe when doing so. And identifying those periods is really hard if you don't get practice at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times you'll be in those situations, a lot of times you are going to lose your caster. It's like, there's a light over there that's blocking me from scoring a zone, and my caster can charge it. Charge and kill it. Sweet, I scored a point. And then you're like, wait, Eris is still over there. Pew! It's all over. Or just the volume of attacks exists that, based on the focus I have to spend, I don't get to live. Or I don't have enough transfers. So, I mean, the caster is a resource. The caster is the hardest resource to learn to use.
It is. We sort of tell new players all the time, don't use that resource so that you get to play to the late game. But now we're kind of telling them you need to learn when to use it. So it's a really a tricky balance. It's hard to explain.
And it's hard to get a handle on as a new player. Like, grasping when to commit, like, Shay or Ashlyn in particular, like those two casters. Or I played a game against Colin in Texas recently where I had to use E. Magnus to kill a stalker, and I had to commit him. But I committed him in a way that he was up in cover with Bullet Dodger on, was def 20, like not really capable of being charged because I feeded on that turn. So, like, knowing when you can get – your caster can do a lot of work, but as long as you can protect him. But figuring out when it's okay to do that and when it's not is –
Is he have Stalker in charge range of Magnus?
He brought it up to kill Galleon.
Oh, good trade.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people wouldn't think to take their caster in to go kill it, and then you're trading at no loss.
Right. As long as you don't lose the game. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm saying I'm saying a lot of people would not think to take Magnus to go kill a Stalker, and then he's getting a Galleon basically for free, whereas he had to spend a Stalker to get it.
Right.
Yep. In your game.
Stalker and Megalith.
Right.
But yeah.
You killed both?
I did kill both.
That's a pretty good trade.
It's a fine trade, actually. So, we have more on this topic?
Well, I think we should probably talk about if you're a newer player and you're like new to War Machine and Hordes and you're just getting into the game, my message to you would be don't lose hope that you can get better quickly. Probably not going to be winning conventions anytime soon, but that's a good thing because it just demonstrates how much depth there is in the game and how much control you have as a player in determining how well you do. It's not there's not as much luck in it as a lot of other games that I've played. I mean, there's still luck, still a factor that makes it interesting. When you lose, you have to look at it as, oh, sweet, I learned something new. And I can move on to the next thing so I can continue to get better and better. You can't look at it as, well, I'm a failure because I can't win. Well, it's really hard just to be good at this game naturally on accident because there's too much you don't know.
There's also... crap. That was a good point.
Damn it.
Something in the air.
It's going around.
God. Scared. I don't want to get this bug.
Are we having heart attacks?
It'll come to me. Wait.
Oh. Oh, he lost it.
Stop looking at me.
He's called a segment training grounds.
That's a magic card.
It is.
Damn it.
They're all magic cards.
Yeah, there's like how many different magic cards are there?
Thousands upon
over 9,000.
Over 9,000?
I thought it was more than that, actually. Is it only 9,000?
I don't know the number, but there are more than 9,000 magic cards.
Oh, I was going to say, I think it's like hundreds of thousands. But
it's not that many. It's not that many.
2 million.
That's a couple hundred each set.
Literally infinite.
No, it's not.
Infinite.
Thank you.
Wow.
He can be taught.
He's learning.
Sounds like he went to the training grounds.
Boom. I've got it. You need to ask yourself questions. And it's even better if you've got a good opponent who can ask you questions. Don't go into, and there's a line here to be drawn to, don't go into a eternal analysis paralysis where before you make any decision, you're incapable, you have to think about it for ages. But make the decision, make your choices, make your moves, and then in retrospect, go back after every turn if possible and be like, why did I do this with this piece? Is there something else I could have done with this piece that might have produced greater effect? And this is where the value comes in playing the entire game, because you get more time to ask yourself questions. You get more time to get answers. It doesn't help you to just play games. You have to take something away from each game that you play.
Along those lines, it's really easy early on to get stuck in this is what this piece does, or this is what this unit does, so this is what it always is going to do. This unit jams. This is why I took it, so it jams. It's going to run up the field and jam. Ask yourself questions. Is there things that...
I don't know what my dog wants, but she wants something.
I wonder if the mic caught that.
I don't know.
It's not just ask yourself questions about like oh, it was a tough choice about what to do with this model, but like every now and then I like to ask myself questions and remind myself that there is nothing that is like a required or obvious move. Like even if it's very obvious, like occasionally ask yourself about that, because sometimes you get locked into a style of play with particular models or particular units.
Sometimes I even ask myself dumb questions and get surprising answers, like should my Reeves have charged this turn? Every once in a while the answer to that question is yes.
Right.
JVP charged me with Winterguard.
That happened. He can get like bear strength and stuff. And
no, he did it just so he could pin face. With Enliven.
Ah.
But... Yeah.
So yeah, it's important to learn from every game. It's important to play every game to its conclusion.
Never give up. Never surrender.
If you get discouraged, especially if you're playing, I mean, if you're playing in just a discouraged mindset, you're not going to be learning.
Well, that's the thing I would definitely recommend. And I think this is actually not necessarily specifically a newbie thing. I think it actually happens in general in terms of a lot of these, you know, nerd hobbies or whatever the case may be, where people get like you attach some sort of like personal value to winning your game or proving that you're the smartest guy in a group of smart guys. And you need to disassociate yourself from that mindset. Like when you're playing a game, the value from it isn't like some temporary, like, yeah, I'm smarter than you because I beat you in this game with dice. No, like the value is I played this game and I learned something from it and I grew as a player. And if you can think of it that way, it becomes much more palatable to lose a bunch to jerks like the guys sitting around this table.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, you lost more to the guys around this table. But I give you credit. You kept coming back. And
that's like, a really good point, though. Like, that's actually something I've talked about with other people before, too, is because it's weird when you get to games like this. I used to have really big rage problems when I would play Warcraft 3.
Yeah.
Which was a you know, 2v, or it'd be a 1v1 real-time strategy game. And it's because you're going directly up against another person. And if you take all of the, which you can't really do this, but like if you do take the all of the like mechanical skill out of playing the game, like out of it, it basically comes down to whoever is smarter is going to win. You know, and that's a really
right
boiled down. And like I said, you can't always like boil it down that far, but like that is the way it feels when you're playing the game. And so when you lose, it's a tremendous blow to someone's ego,
right?
Because you're basically you know, you're basically admitting that you're not as good, you know, you're not as smart as the person that you played against. You know, they outsmarted you. And if that happens continuously over and over again, like, you can really...
Yeah, it can take a toll on you.
But that's definitely something that you need to dissociate with yourself with this game, especially. Like, I mean, even regardless of how true or not you think it is, like, it's just, you're not going to ever get any better if you don't.
I think there's only one person that could say they're the best player at War Machine.
Colin Pope to Pritchard? Jake Van Meter?
Yep.
I mean, that isn't to say that a desire to win is not a motivator to get better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fine.
It is.
As long as you take accountability for the reason why you lost.
Yes.
When I lose, it's always my fault. Even though I will blame dice. Like, I will go back and analyze the game and think of things I could have done better. Every game I lose, I will go back and be like, I could have done this and this and this and this and this and that. But well, I will complain about dice for like 30 minutes after every game I lose.
I was actually talking to Nate Kapke about this just yesterday. And because I was just reminiscing sort of about how weird it was, the fact like our specific meta and aims, like my learning meta from where like I learned the game was just three other people.
Right.
But yet we, like, the four of us were able to play, like, you know, we didn't have a lot of experience playing against a lot of, like, everything in the game, but we became fairly decent players just by playing each other, because we each had this really, it's obviously not a unique mindset, but we had this really, like, sort of special mindset where we wanted to take something out of every game that we played. Every time I played a game, I wanted to get better. Every time Nate played against me, he wanted to get better. Every time I played against Chris, it was the same. Like, Chris wanted to get better after that game. And so every time we played a game, we would analyze it. We would think about, like, all the things. Even if you win, you know, you'd think about all the ways that you could have done it better, how to improve your game, how to, you know, essentially, like, level up, you know, get more skill. And over the course of 3 years of just the four of us, we ended up becoming fairly decent players.
Yeah.
And that's really – I was just sort of thinking about it. Or I was just sort of, thinking about it. I can't think of the word that I'm thinking of.
Reminiscing?
No.
Contemplating?
Yes, contemplating. Thank you. That's a really weird sort of rare thing. Like, normally, like, metas that small don't get very far, it seems like. You know, it's because I see a lot of people doing this thing that I think is just really tremendously bad. For your growth as a player and almost as just a human being, where they externalize all their losses and they internalize all their victories.
Yeah, I did want to talk, segue a little bit into the etiquette of winning and losing in this game. And this is something that was incredibly difficult for me to learn. This was the hardest part of learning this game was not how to be good or not how to what the pieces did. It was how to win graciously and how to... even harder, how to lose graciously.
How would you know?
What? How would I know?
I'm sorry.
And it's an ongoing process, to be sure. But we say this a lot, when you lose, it's your fault. But that does not mean that your opponent didn't play well. And that's something that we haven't said yet. When you lose, when we say it's your fault, it means that there's always something you could have done better when you played. There are no losses that were 100% because your opponent beat you. There's always something you could have done better. When you lose, it's your fault. That is something to use as a maxim to get yourself better at the game. However, your opponent should always be congratulated on their win.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about how that might have sounded. I've definitely had opponents that have outplayed my pants off.
You cannot say... oh, I lost just because of me. Like, nothing you did caused me to lose. It was because I screwed up. That's not what we mean.
You can say that. It kind of makes you a jerk.
Yeah, that's not what we mean.
Right.
When we say, when you lose, it's your fault. We mean you could have played better.
Yep.
That is not to say your opponent did not play well. And so it's sort of a paradoxical way of thinking about it.
You lose, it's your fault is an internal mantra to remind yourself to always evaluate your games, but it has no actual bearing on, like, how your opponent played or whatever the case may be. Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah. Like, it may actually be that even if you played as well as you possibly could have, your opponent still would have beat you. But
hear that,
it's
Colin?
The the thing, like, from my time playing, and I know people hate when we bring this up, right, Crump? But from my time playing...
It's just chat, actually.
No, Magic.
No, it's not.
And, like, the PTQs and whatnot. Something that we would always... You would always, like... The better players would always, like, repeat over and over again is there's no such thing as a perfect game. Like, I have never in my life played a perfect game of Magic, ever. I have never in my life played a perfect game of War Machine. Like, there's too many variables. There's always something different you could have done that would result in a better, probably a better outcome. And that's the thing to remember is that there's never a game that's not worth analyzing. There is never a game, whether you won or you think you lost because of dice spikes from your opponent or whatever, there was something in that game that you could have done differently that would have resulted in a better played game.
What actually, it's interesting. Something that is sort of illustrates that is as more and more of these games from, you know, finals tables get put on video, you'll hear a lot of people talk about all the mistakes they see those players making. Well, I wouldn't have done that, or I could have done this better.
It's and the out of the box.
Yeah. It's interesting because it is easier when you're, like you said, out of the box, when you're the third party watching to see those things. But when you're in the game, there's a lot of other variables that are going on, you know, not the least of which is it's the end of a tournament often, and you've done 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 rounds of War Machine. You probably don't play as well.
I guarantee you.
12 rounds of War Machine. Where's this?
Well, I mean.
That sounds miserable.
Throughout the convention.
Day 3 or whatever.
Exactly.
I guarantee you this actually will happen this year at Iron Gauntlet. Because this year at Iron Gauntlet, they're recording the finals match in a separate room and broadcasting it in a room for other people to watch. And I guarantee you at some point, everyone goes like, why the F would they do that there? Like, that's stupid. You just do this and then I guarantee it happens.
Yeah, the thing is, I think what you'll find is if... Oh, man, this is actually good advice. If you could record your own games... I wish I could record my own games. I hadn't thought about this, but it just occurred to me...
Video camera.
Yeah, well, it would be an amazing teaching tool because I think you'd be surprised how many mistakes you make that you don't remember.
Yeah, that's why... That's funny. One of the number one ways of getting better at StarCraft quickly is to watch your replays. Every single time you play.
Oh, well, that would be so painful.
If you could, you know, because so that's boring. one of the advice that a lot of the pros give or whatever is like you play a game of StarCraft 2 and then instead of queuing up right away, you go and watch the replay. And after you're done watching the replay, then you play another game and then you watch that replay and then you play another game, like just because that's the best way to analyze, you know, oh, wow, I didn't notice this. I'm going to do that differently the next time I play. Ooh, like I did something bad there that I could definitely have done better. You know, I'm going to do it better next time. Etc. Like that's definitely, and that's not really a thing that really can happen in War Machine unless you're
happy
OCD
video,
about yeah.
Okay, I just had an amazing thought.
Mm-hmm.
We need to build a camera that straps to somebody's head.
Google Glass,
GoPro,
Google Glass.
Yeah,
we actually just need if we had a professional sound studio and nerve center, we could create the mom team. With the state-of-the-art training facility in which everything could be videotaped and then we can go back and review all our games.
Forever.
That would be it. The mom Training Academy.
I did think about that when they were talking about Google Glass on the news. I was like, that'd actually be really great for War Machine.
It actually would be.
Yeah. It's just a pair of glasses that have they're like connected to the internet and they have like a little digital display that they project on the glass, like so that you have like an overlay for what you see.
Yep.
It's a future sci-fi HUD. Yes.
But it also has a little camera in it, so you can record things from your perspective. Like, you can actually, like...
How much do they cost?
You can't get them right now.
They're not out until later this year. And then there's a lot of controversy. Like, some cities are banning them preemptively. Because it's, like, this like huge privacy thing. Like, if everyone can go around and record everything that they're looking at all the time and, like, put it up on the internet immediately.
Also safety issues, like driving in your car, like accessing Wikipedia.
Those things will literally be the end of humanity.
No, they're the next wave. It's awesome.
And then you'll go to War Room and it'll crash.
I think it's awesome. Yeah. I just think that, yeah, like, as long as you have to utilize it correctly. But, like, that was one of the first, because I'm a tremendous nerd, that's one of the first things that I, when
was War Machine. Like, yeah, actually.
I was like, this would revolutionize War Machine.
I didn't even think about it, but you're right.
From the perspective of the person playing.
You're right. You're absolutely correct.
Like, they're looking at the models and everything.
Is it bad that what I immediately think about, it's like, man, if there were two cameras, it could totally triangulate distances, and you can create a program that would overlay and perfectly eyeball everything for you.
Oh my god, that is that probably PP is the possible.
See, I just thought it would revolutionize the porn
Google
industry
glass for War Machine immediately in 2014.
Effective.
This needs to happen.
I think that would be a little bit obvious.
Yeah, you're sitting there. Yeah, because you'd have to hold your head perfectly still.
Like tapping the glasses.
Yeah.
No, those do not.
Yeah. Well, it does have voice commands.
Yeah.
You're like,
goggles, calculate
measurement
the distance between
here to here.
Your opponent's like, what are you? Wait.
You're like, no, I'm just in character. I'm wearing, you know, steampunk goggles.
They oh, do look man. Like the scouter.
But no, seeing, yeah, seeing a game from someone's perspective would be would be kind of crazy.
You could literally do that. Power levels over 9,000 in real life thing. To
It's like when he dropped the video camera.
He's trying to break your iPad.
What? I never dropped it.
Which is really his.
Yeah, put that away before I get upset.
I kind of want to see him get upset.
All right, so that covers our new players section.
That was a tangent.
Persevere. Stick with it until the end of the game. You'll learn more.
Never.
Yep. Promise.
Never. Never surrender.
Trust your instincts. enjoy the game for what it is. It's a game. It's fun.
That's very true.
So, now we will enter the dojo.
Yep.
Quite so.
Yep.
Cue the gong. John has a very special dojo for today. He's going to introduce one of his Iron Gauntlet lists.
Yep.
Wait, you're just going to give it up?
Yeah. If people are net decking for me when I've played 5 games this year and I'm playing minions...
2 of which he lost to you.
And 2 of which he lost to Puryear.
Right.
He's 1-4 this year.
He beat me once.
He's 2-4 this year.
So 6 games.
Actually, I think I've played more than 6 if I count the... Since the fire, I think I've played 5, which was January 26th. For those of you keeping score at home. Anyway, I don't think anybody...
Wasn't this the year where he was going to play like... A game a week?
That is
this year, I think, was 2 games a week.
That is correct.
Last year was a game a week.
Was I not off to a good start so in January?
Just like, you were off to a very good start. I just assume you're saving it up for like the summer. You're just going to be like a week of like 100 games.
No.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Although
he still has faith in you, John.
My life is getting back to more normal, so hopefully I'll get more games in.
Minus that very anomalous 27-hour workday.
Right. Yeah, I did get to do that this weekend. 27 hours straight at work.
It also happened to coincide with his wife's birthday, so maybe he wasn't really at work. Who knows?
I can confirm he was there.
I was definitely at work.
Damn it, Chad.
We'll back you up on this one, John.
Yeah. For yeah, can I get a little respect after working 27 hours in a row? Just a little.
No.
27 by there, hours I in mean one day. The strip club with me.
27 hours in one day. He actually traveled back in time to work 3 additional hours. While he was
Wait,
working.
You know Doc Brown?
Great Scott.
All right, tangent Mar- over.
Tangent over, really.
Dojo.
Minions.
Dojo. So I was sitting around last night. We were stuffing fundraiser envelopes.
I'm assuming you were also drunk.
Is that an innuendo?
No. No, we were literally stuffing envelopes.
Nice. Nice, John.
2 in a row.
Stuffing envelopes.
But, And I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to play for my second list in Iron Gauntlet because I don't have much available that's painted for me. And I'm like, Nick's brother Adam, the crump we love, was like, oh, I got all my minion stuff. And I'm like, man, I should totally play Rask because I think that guy's actually pretty strong in the meta. So I started thinking about lists. And so the first thing I did is I went and I looked at his tier list. And I was like,
Theme
nope.
Force.
Whatever. Theme Force.
Eat it.
I went and I looked and I said, no Gatorman Posse. Not playing Gatorman Posse with Fury seems not good to me.
Yeah, probably a decision I would disagree with most cases.
His theme force doesn't allow for Gatorman Posse?
Right.
Only Bogtards.
And
Shamblers.
And Shamblers aren't out.
So. Or Bogtards.
Isn't the Gator contract basically just Gatorman Posse?
No, it's literally... Does a model have Amphibious and it's not a freebooter? Yes, you can take it.
Yeah. So you can take a Buccaneer?
Yeah.
No. Because Buccaneers do not have Amphibious.
And Shay. Can you take Shay?
You can take Shay.
Okay. That's pretty good. You should take Shay.
Storm Rager on Gator.
Swamp Trolls.
Anywho, I decided that I wanted to play Furied Gatorman Posse. So I built a list, and this list was heavily influenced by the way I like to play Efiora, which is
Xerxes,
or similar to Xerxes too.
Feared Gatorman Posse. Xerxes. Yeah.
I like to play with medium-based models in front of heavies, and a lot of heavies. And the reason why I like to do that is you dictate the engagement often, because you cannot trample over medium bases. And so in a heavy-on-heavy fight, their heavies have to get through your medium bases. And it turns out with Gatorman Posse, if I charge you with Fury, they kill your heavy bases. So it's a good situation for me all around. So I built a list with 2 units of Gatorman Posse and like 4 heavies. It was Wrong Eye Snapjaw, Bull Snapper, 2
Wrestlers,
and Swamp Whore. And I was like, this is going to be sweet. And then I played the list, and I had incredible Fury problems. And I was like, good gravy. I need to adjust this a little bit. So,
Did you declare good gravy out loud while you were playing the game?
I did.
Good gravy.
Good
excellent.
Gravy.
I am clearly a fan of good gravy. I'm literally a fan of good gravy.
3 for 3.
Wow.
Perfect score.
I'm shocked.
We've reached him. We have reached this kid.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, you're the worst.
What I thought about was, I was like, man, I wish there was some Fury management in the list. It would make it a lot easier to run. What I didn't realize was that Gatorman Posse are FA3 in Blindwater, not FA2.
Le gasp.
And I'm like, okay, I guess we'll drop a Rassler and add in another unit of Gatorman. So now I'm running 3 units of Gatorman, a Rassler, Swamp Horror, and Wrong Eye and Snapjaw.
With a Bull Snapper.
With a Bull Snapper. Some interesting things that happen with this list in my theory machine. Number one, it should play to scenario really well on the fact that you don't really give up ground. Like, you sort of move into areas and then you threaten. You're just like, well, anything that stands in front of that list is probably going to get crushed. And with his feet, so I think it's right to go second as often as possible. And bottom of 1 foot. I was playing against Adam, and he was playing Signar with E. Haley. And, you know, he ran all his stuff forward. He was playing E. Haley with, like, the way you used to play her, with, you know, 20
a bunch of
steelheads.
Infantry, Thorn, and then a Stormclad is basically the list.
Yeah. so I ran my entire army forward, and then I Boundless Charged Rask, charged him forward and feated, covering everything. And that was pretty cool. It sort of forced Haley to defensively feat. Otherwise, I was going to kill everything because all those posse charge 12 inches. So that's quite a ways across the board. We're playing Incursion.
Remind me how Rask... It's kind of like the Witch Coven sword, right?
It is Rask's model sword. Friendly faction models in his control area, or while in his control area, cannot be targeted by attacks or charges made more than 5 inches away from them.
Okay.
So basically, he couldn't do anything.
Right.
So, but the reason why I like Rask is he's got a very, he plays attrition, assassination, and scenario all three well. And it may not be obvious that he plays attrition or assassination, but his feat allows you to deliver gators.
I agree with the attrition. I'm not sure about the assassination.
Well, his gun enables just about anything to kill your caster. If I hit you, because his gun has got 3 shots. It has remove a fury or focus, gain a fury or focus. It has Eris' shot where it's like disrupt your jack and remove your buffs. And the third shot it has is paralytic aura, which is if you're a living model, you cannot run or charge and your death becomes 7.
Yep, that's bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if I shoot your caster with that.
Don't get hit with that.
No, that's you're going to have a bad time.
You're going to have a bad time.
Also.
Why is that not on the soundboard?
Yeah.
It should be.
Also,
now.
With Snapjaw,
We should have a new segment where we just come up with stuff to put on the soundboard.
I know, right?
This week on the soundboard.
I feel like I'm boring people to death, but Snapjaw has some really interesting synergy in that you can stack Boundless Charge and Elasticity.
The five minion players out there right now are so excited.
They literally creamed in their pants. Yeah, like, John, like, he's just like, John has some minions. Boosh! Like, right then.
That should be on the soundboard.
They actually for sure thought this was a troll at the beginning of the podcast.
I'm actually super excited.
I'm currently walking to the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, the best part about him is that, like, none of his buffs preclude any of the other ones. Fury, Boundless Charge, and Elasticity can all go in the same place.
Yep. So you put those all on Snapjaw, and he's got a 14-inch threat because he gets an innate plus 2 inches to when charging a living model.
Charging Warcaster. Warrior free. Models.
Yeah, you get a free charge. You have reach.
Pow 20s.
Yeah. With Fury. Yeah, like, holy crap. And a free charge. So the thing that a free charge does, and it's not really a free charge because it comes off Rask's, but it comes out of Rask's resources, which is great because he's a warlock.
It is a free charge because Snapjaw charges living warrior models for free.
Right. I'm just saying.
I can't wait until you charge 12 inches with Snapjaw and then I tell you to measure to wrong eye with him.
Oh, no. I mean, you definitely have to be cognizant of that. And so in that situation, when you want to charge that far, wrong eye is going to have to probably charge something.
Or run.
Submerge and charge.
Yep. Anyway, wrestlers with elasticity have a 12-inch threat and boundless charge, which makes them pretty legit. They also have three initials, and they go up to POW 19? No, POW 20.
20. Yeah, they're 17 on their claws, right?
Yep.
No, 14 right. On the claws, 17 on the bite.
So they go 20, 17, 17. And then even the Swamp Horror has four initials and four Fury, and they go POW 12 to 15 and POW 16 to 19 with Fury. So the thing is, Fury stacks on everything in the list really, really well, and if I deliver anything to your Colossal or your Heavy, it's going to get trashed because Rask is going to shoot off your buff, and then you're just going to get smashed, and it's going to be really hard to stop. So it should remove Heavies really well. One thing I've noticed with Gators, too, is they tend to really munch infantry very quickly.
Yeah, unless two attacks is amazing on that unit.
Two attacks with rerolls. So, I mean, they really get through infantry in a hurry, and then they have reach, too, sort of an eight. So
they're basically champions with reach.
They'll get through pretty much anything short of a Chaozzi.
Yep. And I mean, Chaozzi is one of those matchups where you're just like, I have to play a different list, probably. But Krios is going to be my second. Yeah, I know. Seems pretty good, right?
Chaozzi assassin. Like, they just die.
Yep.
Every one of them.
Solid ground.
Yeah. I'd play Rask in that matchup, though. That would be fun.
I'd play that. It'd be fun.
Yep.
He'll just drag your guys out of your feet and murder them.
Yeah, it's not just Chaozzi assassins. It's Chaozzi assassins with Iron Flesh.
Yep.
Like, that's what your Gators can't kill.
Yeah, they can't. They absolutely can't.
Because needing nines with rerolls, two attacks, or two chances per Gator, like, that actually kills Chaozzi's too.
Yeah. I mean, my only shot in that situation is to line up Gators in really good positions and go bowling.
Mm-hmm. So, if each Gator gets on two Chaozzi's, like, you're statistically likely to kill one or both of them.
Right.
At least one of them.
Four shots to a nine.
Yeah. Yep. But, I mean, like I said, that plan becomes line up Gators and slam them over Chaozzi. That's going to happen. But
I just send in the Gators. That'd be me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm talking about in the hard Iron Flesh.
The hard choice would be give them rerolls against living or terror.
Yep. That's the other thing I found with the list, which was really nice, is you can force a lot of terror checks.
Yeah, terror on Gators is really frustrating.
Yeah. So what happens is, at least in the one test game I've played with this list, is his feat delivers Gatorman Posse really well. And once Gatorman Posse gets stuck in,
that's where they want to be.
Yeah, it is like impossible. It's not impossible, but it's really hard to dig them out because now they're suddenly armor 18 with 8 wounds, and they're all in your crap. So they're probably def 13 in terror, def 17 because they're engaging stuff. And you cannot take free strikes from Gators. Nothing wants to take free strikes from Gators for the most part. And then Gators on the charge with Fury just smash stuff. POW 16 charges and two attacks. They just absolutely destroy things. So now I have more targets for Fury. And it's like, can you neutralize all the different ways I can kill your stuff? You know, I don't think so. and it's going to be a slog to get through. And it's a pretty resistant list of Powtown shooting. It's kind of amusing. The one thing that's really missing from the list is there's no Bogtrogs, and I started thinking about it. The primary thing you want Bogtrogs is Call to Sacrifice, which is really cool. But, I mean, you have to let your caster get down to no hit points then. This seems like a bad plan. I think I'd rather just play to keep my caster alive like I normally would in a normal game, and get those 8 points to use the, invest them in things that do more work than Bogtrogs.
Yeah. Although, I'm curious about it, though, just because you're talking about getting Rask close enough to shoot stuff, which means he's probably going to be in the danger zone.
He's going to be 15-15 with transfers behind a sea of medium bases. So
yeah, that's always the key with the true key to keeping your caster alive is not distance from board edge or even necessarily distance from the worst of the threats, but distance from the line of engagement.
So, John, tell me more about being 15-15 with transfers behind a sea of medium bases. I don't know what this is like.
Yeah. That's
you
good.
You die. You die sometimes.
Yeah, and I will, I'm sure. But I'm pretty cagey.
Yeah.
And you don't have to invest his gun in things.
Well, and at the end of the day, you decide whether or not he's going to go in against something. You're not going to put him 10 inches away from an avatar and be like, oh, he'll probably be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I may go up and shoot our defender's ward off him and then charge him with a unit of gators, and then he's going to explode.
Yeah.
So
try and disrupt him. That's really smart.
No. I'm going to pull defender's ward off.
Oh, okay.
And then have a gator, unit of gators charge
ironically,
him.
The same shot.
Or, you know, one of the heavies. You know, any of the heavies are going to take a solid chunk out of him, too. Probably kill it. That's failing, too. Like, free charges change the math on everything.
Yeah, free charges are amazing. Boundless charge is one of the best spells.
It's an amazing horde spell. It's so much better in hordes than it is in War Machine.
So sad.
Yeah, poor Kador and their crappy jacks.
Stupid rush.
Stupid scorn.
Stupid scorn.
Stupid scorn. Scorn.
But
I miss when rush was boundless charge.
But I'm looking forward to seeing like somebody drop their Colossal against me or their Gargantuan.
Like, haha, Gators can't deal with this. And you're just going to be laughing.
I'm going to be giggling all the way to
the
bank.
Put your Gators 8 inches away from their Colossal, and they'll be like, ha, 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 and you'll be like, feet, and they'll be like, wait, what? Yeah. It'll be fun.
It'll be really fun. And I theorize that list should be pretty good against two of the lists I expect to see in Iron Gauntlet.
I'm not sure about the whole going second thing. I always liked, when I played Witch Coven or any of the, like, move up a little bit and or move up, and the whole plan is the defensive feat. Like, I always liked the first turn to run to exactly outside of their threat ranges.
Yeah, I mean,
you might not get your full run out of it, but
it's still both ways have merit.
Depends. I think it's scenario dependent.
Yeah, I found an incursion going second was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's incursion. That's a little bit of the incursion.
That feat makes things amazing for scenario play. I'm just guessing because you just go directly out of their threat range, and then you're gonna score. If they don't do anything,
yeah,
you know, and then you make it so they can't do anything, basically. So they have to give you something.
Yeah.
They have to either give you something or give up.
Points.
Yeah.
Yep.
Valuable points.
Yep. Absolutely. So I'm going to be tweaking the list some. I may try to get a minimum unit of Bogtrogs in there just to give Rask some more cover while he's doing his thing, but not sure it's necessary. Playing the list is amazing. Rask is, there's so many, it's so dynamic being able to like play the game and just look at the board and go, well, I could boundless charge that, I could put elasticity here, I can put fury on that, and you just have a lot of avenues of affecting the game or doing things that I think are not going to be maybe completely obvious to your opponent.
His spell list is so good, but I don't think that he would be nearly as good as he is without his gun.
Yeah. No, his gun is
like the whole package.
It's like the only magic weapon in the entire list.
Yeah, so that's a definite issue. Which
that
is why
a
I'm really
for minions.
Which is why I'm glad that I have Kraos for my second with Errants.
And every once in a while, Inhospitable Ground wins you the game.
Yep.
Oh my god, such a good spell list.
Randomly it'll be like, oh, I'll just cast Inhospitable.
Is there a faction you would say that has a hard time with Inhospitable Ground?
Yeah, there is.
Which faction would you say has a hard time with Inhospitable
Retribution.
Ground?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Definitely.
Good point.
Definitely Protectorate.
Oh, okay.
Whoa, that's
someone go to our soundboard, please.
Yep. Soundboard.
Sound.
Put it on the board.
No, I think he's saying he wants them to hit the button that says Protectorate has no problem with.
Yeah.
All right. Who else has some dojo?
I have some that I could talk about. I've been messing around with Osram a little bit.
Yes, I love it. Don't listen to this hater of short people.
Yeah, he hates short people. So Osram's kind of a
short guy.
An interesting character in that, like, a lot of his stuff, it's taken me, like, a little while to kind of figure out exactly what I want to do with him, because obviously his feed is geared towards Rulic models, and a lot of the Rulic models aren't good.
Good was in quotations.
Good is in quotations, yeah. I know you guys can't see it. I do. You guys can assume that air quotes is around 75% of the things I say.
Right then.
So anyway, he obviously wants Rulic models. He has, like, he's got snipe and fire for effect that make him feel like he wants to maybe play a gun line. He has martial discipline, which indicates some sort of, like, mixed arms or maybe a little bit more melee. He has Energizer in his feet, which is really good with his jacks, but he doesn't really have any way to buff strength. So it's just been, like, kind of a...
It's like building a ret list.
Yeah, it's like you have a lot of... He has a lot of really good tools, but trying to figure out how to put it together was difficult. So the list I am running right now with him...
Highborn?
What?
Continue. I'm paying attention.
Highborn?
Okay. Yes, it is Highborn. It is Highborn contract.
Don't worry, Josh. I am paying attention.
Thank you. Thank you.
These jerk faces.
I'm sorry.
Are you playing tower defense?
I'm sorry.
Is this actually happening?
This is really interesting.
Like I said, a bunch of jerks around the table
is
here.
Is his martial discipline Rulic only?
No.
No.
His battle group is a gunner and a rock ram. And then I take Thor with two blasters. Rock Bottom, Lanissal Rissel, Ragman, Gorman DeWolf, a unit of gun mages with UA, obviously, Hearn and John, Forge Guard, and Boom Howlers. And the list is situated around the idea that it has between the gun mages, two blasters, which can be fire for effect, Hearn and John, which can be fire for effect or sniped. That's a lot of infantry killing power. So early game, like fighting off infantry swarms behind a line of engagement of boom howlers is pretty easy. Martial discipline also allows the forge guard, like boom howlers and forge guard already work really well together as a unit. You've talked about mixed deploying them before.
Yeah. They naturally stratify into waves.
And the boom howlers are very good for blocking line of sight to your def 10 forge guard, which is nice. But with martial discipline, you can actually now just use your forge guard to charge forward, clear off the guys that get jammed up on the boom howlers, which frequently happens. Clear the front of the boom howlers off, and then the boom howlers 4 plus tough and go second, and then move forward and, like, advance deeper, push deeper, jam deeper into the enemy.
What are the solos again? Never mind. I forget.
You got it? Okay. Yep.
Why Lanissa Rissel?
Okay, so that was about what I was going to get to. Obviously, his feet increases the speed of his jacks to begin with, and also the forge guard with the +2 speed and the pathfinder. Lanissa is just a model that's fairly easy to keep safe behind the boom howlers. And then on turns that you don't use the feet, it can increase your threat range on your forge guard or whatnot. But on the turn you do increase your feet, it gives you an effective, like, a maximum threat of 14.5 inches on the rock ram, which is a crazy distance for it to rock it off with full 3 fury and arrive to hit hard and do damage. So it's just a multiplier. Like, he's already got the capability between Energizer and his feet to send Rulic jacks much farther than anybody else is capable of doing, and Lanissa just pushes that a little bit further. So that's why she's in the list.
Also gives the Forge Guard.
The Forge Guard also get
colossal killing power.
Correct. Correct. So
I'm charging 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13 total.
Yep.
This
list
is really interesting to me, because every time I try to build an Osprem list, the first two things that go in it are two units of Forge Guard.
That was how I was initially building it, was with two units of Forge Guard, but there's two deployment. Like, I would get jammed up a lot. Like, the second unit of Forge Guard wouldn't really go where I wanted. I just found that, like, I didn't need the second unit of Forge Guard as I would play it. Sure. But, yeah, like, the idea is you can use your gun mages, you can use Hernan John and the blasters to clear off your initial line of engagement, cut holes out to get to their heavies, send your rock ram up to 14 inches away to kill their heavy, where it gets there with arm 20 if it stays in his control.
So,
or 22, rather.
Why also, Lindisa gives you the free charge.
Rock bottom is there just for command. Like, I've been jamming him in some lists lately to fix failed command checks.
Why not just Rupert?
Because Rupert is a valuable commodity, and this list does not necessarily have anybody that I want to deliver with Pathfinder except for the Forge Guard, who Osram can do himself with his feet.
Sure. I was just curious because the list also had, like, Gorman DeWolf, and that guy wants to be everywhere, so I was wondering
Why
you put Rock over.
Gorman DeWolf is in there just because, like, that could be any other 2-point solo. It's not integral to the list. Yeah. So that's just character restriction issues.
I kind of wanted to build some sort of, like, janky, awesome assassination list where you could, like, it was based around Tarandaler VC and, like, sniping some unit and just shooting casters that were hiding behind, like, Colossals.
Yeah, like, that's definitely something. Like, I know a lot of people, when they built Ostrom, initially built him with just a bunch of gun bunnies with the idea, like, oh, I pop feet and then they're speed 7 and they can move to, like, great angles and have a bunch of boosted 12s with, like, good threat vectors. And I played that list for a little while. I played a list with a bunch of gun bunnies, but it just... It can't crack armor. And, yeah, it's just... I played it with 20 Forge Guard because of that. And it's okay. It's just, like, the feet turn is all there is to it. The reason I like this list is kind of like what John was talking about with his Rask list, because this plays to multiple different angles. Like, it can just attrition down between all the shooting to start off with, and then the ability to crack armor with the Forge Guard or the Rock Ram in the later game. It can play to scenario really well because of the Boomhauer's damage-resistant models, and then on top of it, sniped Thunderbolting Gun Mages and Unstoppable Force with his battle group to bulldoze guys out of scenario zones. So he can play to scenario really well. He can play for attrition really well. Assassination, a little bit less so, potentially, but, I mean, he does have a long threat range on his
fossils.
The Rock Ram and Forge Guard with super long charges.
Okay. I don't know. This is pretty predictable.
It is. It's 14.5-inch threat.
We got Boomhauer out front, yeah. So the Colossal can't really move past them to get...
Gotcha.
It depends on what Colossal it is, I suppose. Because there are those that can remove the threatening pieces from behind. Like, Galleon might blow up the Jacks or kill all the Forge Guard or something like that.
But very true. Very true. It does have the most resistant heavy he has available to it in terms of shooting. I'm not 100% certain that this would be a list I would take.
I like the mages with snipe a lot.
Yeah.
Snipe Thunderbolt's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Snipe Thunderbolt. Hernan John, actually, like, Fire for Effect on Hernan John I theorize that it was fine and good. Obviously it seems good, but it's even better.
It's
like when you play with it, it's even better.
It's like having a mini Durgan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's shooting off a Durgan. Yeah. Like, that is exactly what it is. Every turn you're just bustering.
Do they scatter mode. Two threes?
Two threes, yeah.
The one they fire and then two more?
Yes.
Yep, and it's all it's boosted sevens.
Seems fine.
It's pretty legit.
Yep. Yep, it's for 3 points, it does 3 points of work very easily. So yeah.
I like it. It's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's definitely not a skew list at all. Like, it's just a very balanced list, and I don't know if that's something that is, like, a legitimate player in today's meta, if you can really win with not skew lists.
Absolutely.
What do you take this list against?
I actually feel relatively confident in taking this list versus almost anything that's not just, like, a heavy beast brick. Like, I wouldn't want to go against, like, a heavy beast brick or Jackwall, but everything from trolls to cricks to whatever, like, I would be okay playing. I would play a game with this list.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not think. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's just like, oh, this is awful in all of these situations.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like one of those lists. It's like I've got some game.
Yeah, it's got tools. It's kind of like Ostrom. It's got tools for like every general sort of scenario that you can come up with. So at least at this point in time, this is my favorite list that I've played with Ostrom. So,
how do you rate it with your other lists that you really like?
I need more games with it, probably. Like, it's not as good as my top-tier list, like my Gordon list or my Damiano gunline list or whatever. But, again, those are more SKU lists, so they have sort of specific matchups where this is sort of a general list. But I would slot it into a second tier just below those lists in terms of strength. So, it, like I said, there is a certain comfort and a certain strength in just having, you know, you've got one or two answers for anything that your opponent can throw at you, and that's kind of nice.
Nice.
So geeked.
Very cool.
Anyone else have some dojo?
So I got into a argument in the Lock and Load podcast Facebook thread today where Trevor from Chain Attack was complaining about Kador not being able to take like Jack heavy list, or that they lacked a Jack caster, and I started arguing for like Harkovich because that guy seems pretty sweet as a Jack caster, where all of the Kador Jacks become speed 6 and have Pathfinder all day forever.
That's what makes Fiora a Jack caster, minus right. The Pathfinder.
So, based on that, I tried to build a list similar to, in theory, to John's Fiora list. What I originally came up with was Harkovich, Silas, Black Ivan, Beast 09, and Behemoth was the battle group. And then the rest of the list was a Colden Lord, the Winter Guard boat, and Ion and Holt, because the list didn't have any sort of magic weapons in it. I've made a new one since then. Well, I'll go into the theory behind that one first. So, Harkovich basically has 5 focus to give out a turn if he's with Silas, because you're upkeeping Fortune and Escort. And I was planning on not casting broadsides ever, pretty much. I mean, there might be turns where you're like, this could be really good.
I think if you're going to build that, if you broadsides as part of your plan, there's a whole list built around it. Yeah. And there's certainly an option that that Harkovich can play with, which is the crap loads of demolishers.
Are you thinking about the 7.1?
The new clam bot that's got the 4-inch AoEs.
Demolisher.
Yeah, demolisher. Yeah. And he can just jam those forward, cast broadsides, have them all open up and blow stuff up, and then activate them to close them back up again. I mean, there's a game plan that can be played that way.
I actually really like that strategy. I don't know why people don't do it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't realize those were AoE 4s.
Yeah, yeah, they are.
Holy
they
crap. Sure are. I'm going to rebuild my list.
They're POW 16, right? Two?
Yeah, 15. POW 15. Oh. So you can, with Harkovich, if they're...
That's awesome.
Oh, bombers.
Yeah, and they've got Gunfighter. So even if they're jammed up, you just have them go, you're like, broadsides, and they all shoot. And then you activate them, and they're like, close up. So they just get to stay as armor 25.
The only weak point in the list is just Harkovich dying. So as long as you just protect Harkovich, I like that list a lot.
Yeah. And then the one turn in when you need to, like you're getting down to it, like, all right, I've removed, like, so there's not a whole lot left that can kill my Warjacks. It's like, all right, this turn, feet, like broadsides, like a gajillion POW 15, some of them boosted into the targets that are still threatening. And then it's like, if you've got anything left, jam it forward to protect your now armor 17 Warjacks. And then next turn, back to armor 25.
Turns out Keith had some Harkovich dojo, but not Crump.
Arm 20 if you feed it.
Yeah,
arm, this is amazing.
You
I kind of want to play this.
Yeah,
list.
You can also feet, and then feet the turn that you go crazy and have them just be armor 20 that turn, and then go back to being armor 25.
So I had built this list where, when I originally built it, it was Harkovich spending his 5 focus, 3 of it going to the Behemoth, and then I didn't really have the 2 to go anywhere else, because all Black Ivan needs to be effective with Harkovich is 1 focus a turn from, like, a Colden Lord. because he gets boosted ranged attack rolls. And so I really wanted to fit a second heavy into the list that I could allocate two focus to, so like a destroyer or something, so I could get another bombard. So I have four bombards a turn, like four boosted damage POW 14s from 14 inches away will start killing heavies.
Sure.
But I couldn't figure out how to get the points to work, so I ended up cutting the Beast 09, which he was pretty much just going to run around forever until something threatening got close, and then he was just going to murder it. Just, like, not allocate to the Bombard Jacks one turn and have Beast 09 kill whatever the heck he wants to. But it switched, and so now it's Black Ivan, a Destroyer, Conquest, a Colden Lord, and a Wintergard Boat. And I think I like it quite a bit, because three focused can go to a Conquest, two to a Destroyer, and then Black Ivan can still get the one from the Colden Lord. So just the Conquest being able to boost hit and boost damage every turn from downtown seems like it could be good. As well as boosting chain guns, potentially.
Sure.
I don't know. Like, five focus seems like enough to be a Jackcaster. Like
five to allocate?
Yeah, the argument was that he doesn't have enough focus to give out, or like the Kator casters don't have enough focus to give out. And it's not really...
I definitely think of Gorton as a Jackcaster. I mean, I know he supports his infantry with solid ground, but I think of him as a Jackcaster, and he's only a five focus caster.
But at the same time, you only run two Jacks. So what the argument actually was he wanted to be able to run more War Jacks, a la run four War Jacks.
Fair enough.
And Menoth, and I understood the other side of it. Menoth,
yeah.
Menoth, for example, has Reclaimers, the Avatar, who is no focus burden at all, Sanctifiers, a lot of ways to run multiple War Jacks without.
So how much focus do you need to put on a Jack that's already Mad 8? Seriously.
We started talking about like ways to, like they were talking about like building a Kator Jackcaster, like someone like Morten Eber. And my sort of argument was that they should just come up with instead new Kator Jacks that are more focus efficient, or like you want to put on the table over the, because Kator has some of the best infantry in the game, so you're just like, well, yeah, why would I take these robots when I have these infantry?
The only problem with that is that they can't really do that, because that would invalidate all of the other Jacks that already exist.
Sort of like they did with Retribution.
People still take Phoenixes.
Yes, they took the one Jack that they already took forever.
Yep.
Phoenix still strong.
I concede this argument.
Discordia still strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So Beast 09 and Behemoth and Black Ivan, the ones that currently see play now, will still be strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Just the other ones.
I like the Clambots. I think more Clambots should be played.
Yeah. The other.
Pretty interesting, actually.
I had some sort of fun idea that I thought that Privateer Press should take advantage of. Talking to you, PP designers. Bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Definitely listen.
Yeah.
Dude, they do. Okay, so there's one model in the game that has the ability of Focus battery. Whatever the Manticore has. Or like if you give it focus, the focus doesn't go away. It's like
the
bank.
Hydra. Yes.
Hydra.
Yeah. Is it called focus battery? Is that the name of the ability? But whatever.
It's the focus saver.
They've only put that on one.
It's like a flavor saver, but for focus.
One model.
What did you say?
In the entire game. I feel like they should design some Kator Jacks with that in mind.
Everyone needs to model their Hydra with a weird little beard.
No one plays it at all.
Start playing it.
Especially now with those new Jacks. Put a
flavor saver on it.
Yeah, I think there's the potential. And a caster does not need to be able to create like 47 focus worth of efficiency to be a Jack caster. And it's kind of unfair to compare any other faction to Protectorate, because none of the other ones even come close to working that way.
It's true.
Nobody else has a Jack. I mean, only the next closest thing is Death Jack, who gets two focus for free, and Krix is certainly not a War Jack.
There's
faction.
Also just Jacks in Menoth that need zero focus. Like, Vanquishers need no focus to be efficient.
That was the secret to my Fiora list, to be honest
like,
with you.
They will literally kill, like, five infantry of models a turn with no focus.
Yeah,
there's no other
possible
Jack in the game that does that, except, like, Colossals.
Thunder.
Sure.
Thunderhead. That's a good war jack. That doesn't see very much play. But yeah, I mean, just the kinds of tools that the Protectorate has, no other faction has anything like it.
So I'm going to throw down the gauntlet now, Crump. You were talking a lot of smack in that chat. Are you going to play Harkovich at
Lockenbow? If he brings it, I'll play it.
Really?
He's just like, I forgot what he said. He's like, I dare you to play that list, and I just snap called. I'm like, bring it to lock and load.
And then he was like, oh, crap. I don't want to pack my Cotter, too.
Demolishers. Tell him to bring Demolishers.
Bring me 17 Demolishers. How many Demolishers can I fit?
I think
4.
Holt was playing 4.
I don't think that's the right number, though, because I think Black Ivan is really good with Harkovich.
Yeah, it might be 3.
And I also think both Behemoth and... is also a pretty good jack to run with him.
But you want that bulldoze. Bulldoze compiled upon...
Speed 6 Behemoth.
Speed 6 Behemoth, sure.
Speed 6 Clamjacks!
Speed 6 Clamjacks that run 10 inches and bulldoze the whole way. And then they all do that.
I mean, that's cute, and but that doesn't really advance you towards winning the game. I mean, I guess you can score scenario points that way, but that feels like a one-trick kind of pony. As opposed to having...
Do you want a behemoth up into a colossal's face and feed on it, and then be like, okay. Your turn. Your move.
Armor 24 behemoth is a problem, child.
Behemoth. Your move, Kasparov. Anyway.
I also liked Crump's plan.
He's turning his knight into a unicorn.
So obviously going for the long strategy.
That thing is so amazing. Dang it.
I also think juggernauts are not a bad thing to play with him.
Yeah,
because they allow you to set up the peace trade.
They're 7 points and pow 19. Like, it's the Crusader effect. There are certain Protectorate casters where it's like, oh, Crusaders are a problem. Like, they can kill other heavies with relative ease and cost 6 points.
Are they 7 points?
They're
Juggernauts?
Juggernauts are 7.
They're 7, but they're also armor 20 with 34 boxes.
And are pow 19, unlike 20. Mm-hmm. Choir tax.
So they have a 9-inch threat range. Is pretty serious.
Yeah,
that's good enough. And like I said, it's hard not to trade up for value with those things. It's like you put the juggernaut out in front and say, "What would you like to kill with?" Otherwise, I'm going to charge something you love. And you're like, they're like, I guess I have to kill it, or they have to back up a bunch.
Well, I mean, that's what Flancer was doing, right?
Yeah, it was really annoying. That's what I was telling those guys in that chat. I was like. Because they were like, well, things that work for Flanzer don't necessarily work for everyone else. And I'm like, all I know is that list was really annoying.
Dude, I got the list.
How many possible juggernauts can you fit into a list?
I got the list. It's Harkovich, 6 Demolishers, and a War Dog.
That sounds terrible.
Sounds pretty bad.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
I think you could play him with upwards of 5 heavies, though, if you wanted to.
You could.
Couple juggernauts, Demolisher or 2, Black Ivan.
The tricky part is having enough focus to keep them all moving.
How do they kill the Demolishers?
What's that?
How do they kill the Demolishers?
Domination.
6 turns. They don't. They kill Harkovich.
How are they going to get to him with 6 Demolishers? There will be Harkovich in the middle with 6 Demolishers clammed around him.
Uh-huh. So Krios
will feed.
The scenario loss is your plan, then.
Yes. No, it's the giant blob that's in hope to God the scenario is like.
See, the first thing I'm going to do is
I'm going to
feed with Krios.
Dude, aren't Clamjacks steady?
No.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's lame.
That's Crabjacks.
Dude, no. What are you talking about? Harkovich is steady with a War Dog.
No, he's not.
You cannot knock you down.
What?
Are not tonight. There. Every time. All right. That's the dojo for this week. I'll have something next time. Chad, you're good, right?
Yeah. I think so.
If you switch to cool factions like Minions, you too could participate in cool JoJo. I'm just saying.
Dojo is not that sweet. Your dojo JoJo? Is Mojo Dojo.
Mojo Dojo.
There's our dojo sign-in.
There's the dojo sign-in.
Oh, man.
So we have a couple more. We have some lightning round questions for this week.
Woohoo! Lightning round. This is my favorite.
Before we sign off. Courtesy of Thomas Patrick Kusterin?
Okay. That was terrible. Murfreesboro.
You've got nothing.
It's Murfreesboro.
If you could pick one caster to pull from another faction into yours, what would it be?
Oh, God.
I'll start since I've had time to think about this. As a Crix player, I would pull, I'm pretty sure I would pull Irusk.
Irusk. I would pull Irusk.
No for, all those command checks you keep failing.
Command
finally.
Checks I keep failing and making, you know, four up tough, steady, Satixus Raiders.
Yep.
And four up tough, God. Steady. Double weapon master.
Battle Lust is a spell I want so badly in Mercs. So badly in Mercs. Mm. It would fix so many problems. Irusk. That's the caster I would pull into Mercs.
See, I would also have a Scarlock.
I'm just tired of seeing Irusk. No more Irusk. I hate Irusk with a... No, not okay.
All right, so Irusk is coming to to Mercenaries and Crix. Chad, I know what I would say as a troll
I know
player.
You're going to tell me to say Carver.
It is Carver.
I think it's Gordon.
He doesn't have
nice
an armor
choice.
Buff.
Wait, isn't it Peace Striker?
Nice choice.
Doesn't has, have an armor buff.
He has solid ground and a wall.
Actually, now it might be Father Lucant. But
double wall, plus solid ground, plus strength of granite, plus he's armor 19 base, so 21 with the Creel Stone.
Yeah.
Transfers. And, oh,
God, I don't know.
It would be amazing.
He would be tough because he's a troll. If he's in the troll faction,
do we have to limit. Is this full on?
He's never going to get tough. He's armor 21.
Is right? This full on? Who's the boss, or should we stay within our systems? Because like turning a warcaster into a warlock is generally hideously unfair.
One caster you want in your faction? Yeah. No, it just has one caster you want in your
caster,
faction.
I mean,
so
it could also be
machine.
At that point. I would entertain Xerxes as a possible option.
Oh right,
because he's got
Defender's Ward,
and Fury, and Martial Discipline
and really
in trolls.
God, I know what the one is.
Yep.
For...
Yeah, it might be Xerxes.
Xerxes also seems
Mark, so I'm going with Red.
All right. For Legion, I want Karchev.
No, you can't. None of that.
What?
Crossing systems. You can't give Karchev transfers.
I want Karchev with transfers, and I want Unearthly Rage with a million Scythians that go 24 inches.
No, you can't have
it. It seems completely reasonable.
No.
Why not?
No.
You're crazy.
Apparently, you have to stay in system. Keith has chosen this to be the no fun lightning strike.
Well, I see. I didn't realize.
Mine's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So
getting struck by lightning is supposed to be fun, Keith.
Nah.
For Menoth, I think Father Lucant would be an amazing Menoth caster.
You don't even know all his spells.
You don't need to.
Already
you do
amazing.
Not need to. Not at all.
How about some double choir bonus? Seems good. How about deceleration for that faction? Seems good. How about plus four armor and auto repairs? Because John's mechanics always fail.
They do. My mechanics are dumb.
Seems good.
Yeah. Actually, Forge Master's Thentharion would be good, too. Like, a fixed version of Amon would be pretty sweet.
Yep. But he doesn't have
Could he, can he do the rebuild on the Avatar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rebuild the Avatar.
And then you've got Enliven and Reconstruct.
Yeah, that's totally
How do you
fair.
Kill that Warjack?
Oh, man. So much fun.
I think...
I still want Karchev and Legion, though. I think it's fair. It's fine.
The since Josh already answered Rhett, or Mercs, I'll go with Rhett. It's a coin flip. It's either P. Kane and Rhett or P. Haley.
The correct answer is Epic Vlad.
Oh, my God, yes.
This has been proven.
I don't know. Mage Hunter Strike Force that always have Dead Eye are actually good.
What does Epic Vlad do for Rhett?
Gives them plus three to hit
and
transference.
Yep, a little bit of the
transference.
Yeah. The one downside, or the one, like...
You want to see Mage Hunter Assassins never fail?
No, I don't.
One weakness.
Hand of Fate on one of them and transference.
Sure. Of the Mage Hunter
But Assassins. But it feels like there's a lot of, like, why not... P. Vlad with Signs Importance.
Also fine. But yeah, just having Strike Force with Hand of Fate on them, incredible.
Sure. Actually, Kador and any other Kador casters in any other faction are pretty much unfair.
Yes, they are.
I agree with that statement.
Or Shay. Shay could go in every faction and be amazing.
I would love it if Shay was in Mercs.
It'd be good. If you could play that.
Just yank him right into Highborn.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Lock and load.
Yep.
Boom. All right. Next Lightning Strike question. This is supposed to be Lightning Strike. What are you doing?
Courtesy of Eric. Do you people make up your last names?
Eric Murfreesboro.
Acevedo. Also Murfreesboro.
Ooh, my notes were not good enough.
Oh my.
How to take your game to the next level playing 2 to 3 games a week. We talked about this before. It's just making each game count, I think, is the most important thing. Picking opponents, that give you a good game.
Yeah, just try to take something away from every game that you play. Try to improve something about every game that you played.
Talk about the game. Think about the game. Like, 2 to 3 games a week is enough to give you a lot to think about.
You got
to
sleep the game. You got to dream about it. You got to eat War Machine Cheerios for breakfast and crap War Machine poop for lunch.
Wait.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Whatever. All right. Next lightning strike.
No, hold on. I think if you want to get better at the game, you have to think about the game a lot. And if you think about everything that you do in the game and analyze it, really analyze it and see what worked and what didn't, you get a lot more out of those three games than most people get out of their games that I see play.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it's that simple.
I concur.
All right. From Tristan Cannon, what rule do you most commonly see misplayed? For me, it's elevation. An elevated model ignores all other models when drawing line of sight, except for those within an inch, and then they ignore models of their base size or smaller.
Colossals on the hill are bad news.
Colossals on a hill, nothing blocks LOS at all, period, the end, except other models on the hill. So I see the elevation
other colossals.
I see the elevation rules
within
very
one inch.
Commonly misplayed.
Right. Transfers.
No,
you're doing it wrong.
Really? If you have your guy with like base to base with a colossal and then your colossal's on the hill, you can see past it?
Yep.
Sure can.
That doesn't feel right.
You only ignore models that are, or you only don't ignore models that are bigger.
Right.
And then only if they're within an inch.
There are no bigger models in your colossal.
It's not equal to or bigger. It's just bigger.
Okay. Fair enough.
Transfers is what I see played wrong the most often.
Really? Thank you, Josh, for illustrating our point exactly.
There you go.
In what way?
Well, I see a lot of people who will take a Fury off of their caster and put it on their War Beast. And that's not correct.
No, it is not.
Oh, God, what's that thing that tills me
alternately, alternately frenzying. Nobody even knows how frenzy works. It's true.
It is. I had questions last time something frenzied.
This is for you, Hacksaw. Bendy tape measures have really gotten on my nerves, mainly because every time I see somebody bend a tape measure, I hear Hacksaw saying, "Don't bend your tape measure." And the reason why it's important is bending your tape measure for a movement is not an accurate form of movement.
Not in most cases.
Yep. Because your base has volume.
Mine is people shooting guns. All the time, people will measure the range of their gun. So, like, if I'm shooting a 12-inch gun, I just put basically a ruler out on the table, which is not what you do. You measure to the model, not further.
Right. I actually just imagined when you said that you've been playing a lot of games where guys like Yosemite Sam was standing next to you and just firing guns into the air. I thought that was what you're...
Me too.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get all political up in
here. I hate discharged firearms in my conventions.
I understand why people do that, though. Like, that's the way that I... Because I don't put my tape measure... I don't start my tape measure at the enemy's model. I start it at my model. If I have a 12-inch range, I will pull my tape out to 12, and then I'll put the 12 over my base.
Yep.
And see if the tape reaches yours. And oftentimes, that just means it goes way farther.
Because otherwise, if I'm starting at your model, I may be like, oh, that was 14 inches.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have measured that.
Exactly. If you start at the other person's model, like, that can be cheaty. You know?
Both ways are cheaty.
No.
Measuring...
So you're saying you should, like, have the tape measure, like, collapsed, and you should, like, slowly extend it out, like, until it gets to their model? Like,
that would be technically correct. That is technically
correct. You can't overmeasure. Yeah. Overmeasuring is not allowed.
Oh. All
right.
This is interesting. I think they actually ruled that towing on and towing in is not going to be officially in the rules.
Oh, thank Christ.
Yeah. So this argument of... Your model is not elevated because it's not an inch off the ground because the hill is only half an inch or you're only towed on, goes away.
I don't know who these people are that, like, are trying to enforce this. I've never, ever, ever seen anyone.
Yeah, it's never happened to me, but I sure hear about it on the internet a lot.
Have you ever seen these things on the internet? They've got some stuff on that internet there.
Oh, the internet. All right. Next question from Daniel Horn.
Dang it, I actually knew a better one. Can I get a different one?
Go.
It's lightning strike.
Look, this one is important because people F it up all the time.
Well, it's lightning strike.
With the, like,
slash
run
round
a terrifying model
crossfire
into your unit. So say I have like a unit of Doom Reavers, and I run one model into your guy's unit, and then I say command check, and your opponent rolls the command check. Whenever you do command checks, it's at the end of a model slash unit's activation.
I think it's the end of movement.
Sorry.
End of their movement.
Yeah, people will try to gotcha with that. They'll be like, run a Doom Reaver into that unit, command check.
Oh, and this one's for Crump. You can measure your melee range at any time.
Nice.
Fact.
What does Daniel Horn have to say to us?
Daniel Horn asks the question, is winning on Dice Down cheap?
Yes.
Nope.
Not at all.
I would say no.
Maybe.
Let me explain why.
If you're up.
This is Lightning Strike. That's done. Question
answered. Yeah, done. Lightning Strike.
No, I actually want to address this because some people have some misconceptions about Dice Down. If you play the game with Dice Down in mind from turn one, which is A, you deny your opponent scoring the first point if you can, and B, you score the first point and stay up on points the entire game. As long as you're up on control points, you win the game. So I see a lot of players win on Dice Down because they get up on control points and the other player doesn't understand that when you're behind on control points, everything else doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a different game. And any time that a different rule set is in play, like, honestly, in my opinion, there is no cheap. There's only within and without of the rules.
I agree.
I do think there are things that are cheap. For example, winning on Death Clock.
That was the second part of his question, is winning on Death Clock cheap? Or is playing for Death Clock cheap?
I mean, it would probably be an independent case basis.
I think that there are certain tactics that exist for playing in Death Clock that are not good for the game. I can't call them cheap because they fall within the current rule set, which means there may be a problem with the rule set.
I agree. I don't like a lot of the stuff that happens during Death Clock. I don't think it's cheap. I agree with you. I think that if it's in the rule set and if you're following the rules by doing it, and if it gives you a better chance of winning, that is a valid strategy.
So maybe more in the spirit, like what is likely the intended spirit of the question.
Yes.
Are there things that should be changed to about playing for Death Clock?
I'm not sure what changes can be made to Death Clock to make it so that the end of games don't look like what they do. The frantic scrambling and the just like the total breakdown of anything resembling like accurate play that happens towards the end of Death Clock games.
And actually, one thing I've noticed too, and most people they'll bring up the argument, and I mean for us to spiral into a Death Clock versus Dice Down debate, but they'll say, look, only like 20% of games actually go to Death Clock. Well, another 30 to 50% of those games went to Death Clock, except that the other person killed themselves trying to do something because they knew they were going to clock. So they committed their caster, and they knew, and it was all in. And it might have only been like a 10 or a 15% chance to kill their caster, but they had to go in. So even when it's not a Death Clock situation where they actually died to the clock, a lot of times they just die because they committed. Because they were going to clock.
Sure.
The clock made them do something that they wouldn't have otherwise done.
90% of all statistics are made up on the spot. Just saying.
I don't think winning on Death Clock is cheap, but I don't like it as much as I like winning on Dice Down.
I think that makes sense if you think about the kind of person that you are and the kind of people that we are. Because, yeah, the argument that you're making is... this is Lightning Strike, damn it. We're talking about this question too much. You tricked us, Daniel Horn. The kind of people that we are, like you, like the point that you made, I hadn't ever heard it before or really thought about it, but I agree with it a lot, was that as the clock runs down, accurate play degrades tremendously. And accurate good play degrades tremendously, and I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just becomes a matter of pointing at general spaces of the board. Like, you know, you just try and move models as quickly as possible, roll dice as quickly as possible. And then, like, that whole section of the game, it just becomes a nightmare. You know, whenever you're making a damage roll and you have to wait for them to mark the damage off, and it's, like, a huge hit to your time if you've only got a minute left, you know, that's only, like, 3 damage rolls.
Yeah.
If you take into account, like, the time it takes for them to, like, see the dice, see that you're not cheating them, like, confirm that your math is correct, and then actually, like, mark the damage. That's, like, 3-4 damage rolls. per minute, you know.
Actually, they need to make... That's something that they could change in Death Clock, is make it more clear when to ship the time is okay. Like, the second... Like, say I'm attacking a Jack, when can I ship the time? Is it when I say how much damage I've done, or is it, like, when the dice hit the table and, like, the result is there?
There needs to be some clarification on that, but when you get down to the end of it, then you're in situations where it's like, I roll out the dice, I do the math, I ship the clock, but your time is low, too, so then you start, like, slashing at your card with your marker, just trying to, like... I hate rushing. Just drives me crazy.
Any time where someone provokes a free strike and you would, it's like in your 100% best interest to take that free strike, but you just go, no, no, no free strike, because you don't want the time to come on your side at all, you know? Like, I hate that.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, I mean, like I said, it's, I don't consider it cheap, I just don't
care for it.
Right.
It's not cheap. I do not like people that game the system. I'd rather people engage in the game of playing War Machine.
Yeah, you want to see every game go to fruition, and when it can't.
But I mean, if the system is encouraging it, it's not the player's fault for doing it. It's the system's fault for encouraging it.
Yeah, it's just more of a general... Opinion.
It's both.
It's just more of a general dislike for Death Clock.
No.
If there is a solid winning strategy that the system encourages, I don't blame players for using it.
There's no such thing as an unofficial rule.
Right.
I agree with you, but I think that in this particular game, there is a social contract in order to play it competitively, because there's no judge watching everything to make sure every movement is exactly precise. There's no, you know what I mean? There,
sure.
I feel like there's a social contract, and part of that social contract is not playing to win on Death Clock, but playing to engage in the game of War Machine. The point is to win a game of War Machine. When you win on Dice Down, you're playing to scenario to win the game on scenario.
Well, that's because your perception of War Machine is based around timed turns and casual games. Someone else's perception of War Machine could easily be based around Death Clock entirely, and then they would think that this is what War Machine is to them.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying trying to time your opponent out, for example...
That's not what you consider to be the game of War Machine, but that could be what someone else considers to be the game of War Machine.
I don't think it's what...
I don't know. Like VP sniping, for example, from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I equate more Death Clock, winning on Death Clock, to that than I do.
I guarantee you that there were people back in the day that thought that that's what War Machine was. So that's what the
game
was about.
A game of victory points until Dice Down occurred.
Yes.
And then the system changed to no longer encourage that, because maybe that's not what Privateer Press wanted it to be.
Right.
And some of us may think we know what Privateer Press wants it to be, but the only way that that's communicated to us is through the rules.
We definitely know what Privateer Press wants it to be. They definitely want every single game to go to fruition and end with someone winning by 5 scenario points or someone's caster getting killed. However, that's just not possible in a tournament.
True.
Like, that's definitely what they want. I don't think...
I would agree with that.
They would, yeah.
I don't know any reason why they would want anything else.
Yeah, they're just like, nope.
I don't want a satisfying conclusion to this game.
But yeah. Last question.
They just Calvin ball it and come up with
Nice.
Well, your caster is down to 6 HP, but your belt buckle is unbuckled, so sorry.
Good game.
Use the game.
From Brian Bivona and Patrick Saunders, how do you get the oh-so-important second charge with heavy cavalry?
Hoof it.
You have to have a caster that enables that, for the most part.
Yeah, that's exactly the short answer to it, is that you have to be playing a caster that supports heavy cavalry in some way. I don't think there are any, or a list that helps support them. There's no heavy cavalry that just stand alone and, like, we will get to charge twice. It's just not going to happen.
I think the only way you can really do that is to not take advantage of the advantages of cavalry, which is the extreme threat ranges. Cav ends up vanguarding for you often because it outthreats everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You can set up a second charge situation if they're, like, your third wave.
Yeah, absolutely. Possibly like a martial discipline type scenario where you can charge them and then run other models over top of them to screen again, and then they can charge again.
Yep.
I was going to say, like...
But that's a caster that supports it.
With a steelhead, Cav, and Stannis, you can sometimes get that scenario where
you charge through the steelheads, kill some stuff,
and then the halberdiers get in front of your your steelheads again. And then I also, because they're flanking and you naturally want to keep them behind the steelhead wave, you do occasionally end up getting, like, one big charge, and then you get, like, two guys left over to charge because they're, like you said, a second wave sort of situation.
I think I could be engineered with Boom Howler, too.
Like, good.
With pretty much any of the heavy cav that coincide with lists that can be played.
Sure.
Boom Howler is just like, all right, these Stormblades are going to charge, and we're like, we waited, like we held them back until the lines engage normally, and it's like, charge, and zap, zap, clear off some Boom Howlers, and then Boom Howlers charge forward again. Like,
right. All right,
we're good to go one more time. But they do, in some cases, to get full effect, like with impact attacks and their all their attacks, you do kind of need some open room to play with. So most of the times it ends up being casters with strong control feats.
Agreed.
Or ways to move the heavy cav again after they've activated, which is pretty rare. That's like Gristle and some tactical supremacy here and there.
Damiano.
Yeah. And in that case, then you're like, charge in, move back, move other things into place.
Or Epic Denny
with the Bane cav is going to be glorious because she's going to be charge him in, Shadowbind the world, charge him again.
Kill him.
Did you say Epic Haley?
Epic Haley, it's been done. Yeah. It's been done, for sure.
Oh, there was actually... trying with E-Magnus.
Oh, crap.
I saw Epic Striker use the cav a lot, actually.
Yeah, he gets... He just sort of engineers two pseudo-charges in one turn. He's like, charge them in, feet, advance them forward, attack some more stuff, now they all die.
Oh, I had built a... that's who it was. I had built a P. Haley list with Storm Lances in it. On the theory of that... Minus two DAF on impact attacks is really good.
Yeah.
And since they can't run a charge, your cav can't ever get charged. So, like, they can kill a line and then not get retaliated against, you, like, in theory, and then can charge again. I don't know if it's actually good, though. It could be. Yeah.
I'm not like sure if she does enough to keep them alive. And also, Storm Lances are ultimately infantry clearing pieces in a faction that needs no help.
Yeah, I was just saying, I know Brian plays... Signar.
I don't know how you guys deal with not having Hoof
It. This discussion just makes it, like, makes me realize just how, like, because not only your long riders almost always get 10 points of work done, like, on their first charge, and then they hoof it away.
That's true.
And then they do another 10 points of work, like, on the next turn.
That's true.
It's just absurd. It's disgusting.
This is what it feels like to get bum raped by a buffalo, I would assume.
Makes me so warm in my pants.
The hardest part of this.
matchup.
Why do you seem so bitter?
To be fair, Tumblo with Hoofit are kind of
bullcrap. They're assholes.
You guys should just play trolls.
Experience
what it's like to play good cavalry.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
With eight points of
health.
Right. God, why?
It's trolls.
Wouldn't make any sense for them to have five.
Nope, that's it. I would gladly trade a health point for her.
Look, in Mark 1, they had one.
Yeah,
higher
no doubt,
armor.
Right?
I'm just saying, they got nerfed.
More armor and the same amount of health.
Yeah, and higher power weapons.
Yeah, what the crap.
Cavalry. WTF.
Cavalry, jeez. Unbelievable.
They're terrible.
And on that note...
Is that it?
The lightning storm is done?
That's all for the lightning strike today. Lightning round slash crossfire.
You get caught up in a...
You'll get caught up in a...
Crossfire!
Couple of parting announcements. Number one, we will not be here next week. We're going to apologize in advance. Oh, no podcast next week.
Colin and I will do a podcast.
All right. I'll leave you the equipment. That's fine. But
this is going to be like the Merry Crumpmas.
The Merry Crumpmas.
Yes.
We should do some kind of... We should record a game or something on Wednesday.
Colin will tweet a lot.
You're leaving on Wednesday, aren't you?
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know what time, actually.
You probably should look that up.
I can totally just sit there and just be like,
So we're taking the week off for Lock and Load.
Yep.
We'll have extra coverage from Lock and Load, including, I'm sure, the full convergence spoilers for what we already do not know.
Actually,
Colin's thumbs will bleed from tweeting.
You probably should follow us on Twitter because we're gonna tweet out all kinds of, like we did last year at Lock and Load. I don't know if some of you were around, but we did questions and answers, and that was really fun. So we'll probably do that again.
Tweeter updates all weekend long.
We'll
tell you exactly how much sushi we're eating.
Oh my god, we're gonna eat so much sushi that Chad's gonna get food poisoning again.
Yep.
We'll take a picture of John getting slapped with a giant fish. I think that was happening.
Yeah, are we doing that? What was that bet for?
What?
I should make that bet with Trevor about that Harkovich list.
It should just be a fundraiser, $1 to slap John with a fish. I'd make so much money.
You have to bring your own fish.
What? Well, it's fine. The Pike's fish market is just down the road.
You just keep using the same fish.
Nobody wants to slap
can't
me anyway.
Use
come
the
on.
Same fish.
I do want a
July
fish bet.
6th, 50-point steamroller is the...
In Des Moines,
the
Iowa.
The childlike sign that Colin has scrawled on a piece of paper.
July what?
Yes, so there
July
is a...
July 6th.
July
I believe
6th.
I believe the Y is backwards, like a lemonade stand. It's very cute.
All right, so this is an early notice that on July 6th, we'll be having a 50-point steamroller event at Des Moines, in Des Moines, at Mayhem. There we go. With our normal excellent prize support and good company. So plan on that for July.
Who's running that event? You're running that event, Colin?
Apparently John Damaris is running that event. Dude, I'll run it. I'll run it.
4th of July weekend.
No, I think Colin's going to run it. That's going to be amazing. I might get to play.
I might.
I will help Colin run it.
Wait,
this.
Colin's running it?
I know, right?
Colin and I are running it.
Oh, my God. You just made it worse. Why would you do that?
John's running it.
Keep an eye on us on Facebook. That's where we collect material for our lightning round.
And other topics. And
yeah, we can't really come up with anything by ourselves.
And also collect likes, unlike Kesha.
Right. Also, Trevor from Chain Attack got me again on Facebook. God, he's some of my nemesis.
We got to get a fish slap bet on him.
Fish slap bets apparently solve all problems.
Now, if anybody wants to take a fish slap bet with me at Lock and Load, let me know.
It does sound like an amazing bet. To witness, not to
yeah, exactly. Part. I agree with
or
that.
To be a
part. I agree with that.
You are the slapper, not the slappy.
I don't know that I'd enjoy slapping someone with a fish that much, but I would enjoy watching it. I know that for.
Would
a
you
fact.
Enjoy yeah, slapping Crump in the face with a fish? Yes, you would enjoy slapping Crump in the face with a fish.
Like, how big a fish are we talking about? Like
huge, down at Pike's Peak or
like
Pike's Market.
A tuna. Like,
whatever you want to buy to slap them with.
No.
Yeah, like there's a price range, like tuna, $500.
Hold on. Can we get like some sort of indemnity clause where Yama can't be held responsible for killing a person for slapping them
and
with
you
a fish?
Can't hit them that hard
with a fish? They're like a baseball bat. Have
yeah,
you
I'm
seen
saying
those things?
Don't hit them that hard.
Yeah, it's slapstick comedy. Not I'm gonna murder
it's
you
not
with a
fish,
fish
bludgeon bat. It's fish slap bat.
Yeah, but you used Crump as an example. I'm
slaps
sorry, that's where I went.
Are not fatal.
Right, but with what court? Hard, what no. court in the world is gonna prosecute you on the grounds that you slapped Crump to death with a fish?
Most of them, I would imagine.
I would hope. So.
What country do you live in?
And sir, that was when I murdered him with a fish.
And I mean, the ones that wouldn't condemn you for the murder would condemn you for wasting of the fish.
Legit.
I mean, I was planning on hanging out in Iron Arena a lot and just playing games against people. You could probably instigate some sort of fish slappery in those.
It sounds like something that you could get Billy or Mike involved in fairly easily.
God. Wait, Chili or Pierre?
Either.
Okay. Yeah.
Dealer's choice.
Both.
What if we get like the line?
Double barreled mics.
I'm sure Texans will take a fish. There is a Texan who will take a fish.
I tried Pagani last year and he wouldn't.
Pagani
not,
seems like the
not
least
Pagani.
Likely choice.
No, we hardly knew them at this point.
Pagani will definitely take a bet like that if he knows he's going to win.
Sure.
So
sure.
Like,
and then we just
you can't get fair
him.
Odds out of that guy for that though. Like, I 100% guarantee you, if you're like, all right, Pagani, you play Epic Morvana, and I will play 35 points against your 50 points, and I will play Amon Adraza for a fish slap bet. And he would be like, in.
Fact.
That killed the whole conversation.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's happening on
like,
this
so
podcast
if,
anymore.
If any of you on the forums want to come up with some sort
wait,
of...
Wait, we're still podcasting.
Post them in this episode's thread. We out.
So the point is that Facebook is a good place for interacting in such ways as even making fish lap bets.
It is this new social media site you might have heard of.
New social... It used to be just for people in college.
Also Twitter.
Now it's for everyone.
True. Or even our forums.
Twitter, the fastest growing social media site.
Is it?
Yes.
I thought that was Google Plus.
Nope. It really?
I said,
wow.
Wow.
Or use our... Or use our forums.
Yes, we also have forums. MuseOnMinis.com/forums.
I will make
a forums.
I will make a fish slap bet thread.
In the forums?
Yes.
Or on Facebook?
The forums.
You should do
both. You don't make threads on Facebook.
You make posts on Facebook. Posts on Facebook?
Not a thread.
John, you need to stop playing Tower Defense and save us.
We out. This has been
Muse on Minis episode 56. Thank you for tuning in. This has been Fat Asian.
Chad.
Josh.
Keith.
And Crump. Keep calm and muse on.
Good episode, guys.